Archery course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are four unforgettable courses, three of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with our stuff?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Just shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were bastard, but man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. W-R-I-F. Riff. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station. 101, The Riff unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call The Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage. Just log on to WRIF.com. It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101. The Riff. Riff. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
Bill Clinton, 298 WRIF. And what a week it's been. Do I say that every week? There is something in this country as an indication of how wrong we are going when every week is crisis, tragedy, serious events. And we're treated to this 4 days of infomercial, Monday through Thursday, of the Republican convention. You know, actually, saying Republican convention and conservative, that takes too long. You know, radio is about speed, quick, you know, getting on with things. So I think I'm just going to call it con. You know, we'll call it, rather than saying the Republican convention, we'll just call it the Republican con. How's that? And we can call conservatives cons. All right? Is that okay? And if anybody wants to think of something for progressives or libs, they call liberals libs. So we'll call conservatives cons. The demonstrations were absolutely incredible. Yeah, essentially, what went on was a nonviolent mass uprising of New Yorkers and other people that came in from around the country to say, Bush, get out of town. You can't use 911, our grief, our anger, our despair, our sadness for your political ends. And at the end, $65 million was spent on security. And Mayor Bloomberg said, oh, don't worry, the federal government is picking up a lot of this. So in other words, your taxes, my taxes, rather than going for what we know the money should be used for, went to protect this infomercial that had no business going to New York City in the first place. That it was pure manipulation, pure politics that drove this party to have its con right there. Now, it seemed to have worked well, though, nationally. New Yorkers hate the Republicans more than ever. Let's see here from Time Magazine. Bush opens double-digit lead. 52% today would vote for Bush, 41% for Kerry, 3% Nader. And so Kerry's getting blown out of the water, isn't he? That's the way it looks. Maybe we ought to just give up. Hand it over to them. I mean, they stole it the first time, but looks like they're on target, moving along towards a presidential victory. Now, you can't even call it a re-election because he wasn't elected, but a triumph. Actually, what happened is a triumph of the image over the real. Triumph of the image over the authentic, if you think about that. The stage-managed infomercial, people kept saying to me, did you see his speech? They would say, ooh, did you see his speech? I said, are you talking about Bush? And they said, yeah. I said, why would I watch that? I mean, I didn't watch Kerry's speech. I mean, speeches at conventions are these, you know, highly crafted, highly rehearsed pieces of rhetoric whose attempt is to, govern our thought patterns. Make our decisions, what should be our independent, autonomous decisions, the ones that are planted in our minds by what's coming across the television. The television particularly. Well, I was having dinner with a friend, and someone reported, oh, I was listening to Air America, and Janine Garofalo, one of the hosts, was saying, hey, somebody just disrupted Bush. So I thought, oh, maybe there's lots of people in there. So I thought that would be worth hearing, not just somebody telling us how wonderful everything is and how much better things are going to get, and we're winning the war against terror, and everything is just going splendid in Iraq and what have you. So I listened to a few minutes, and I just said, this is crazy. I'm turning on WRF and listening to some rock and roll. And I've said before, listening to anything important on television, on mainstream television, I'll get to the little footnote in a second, mainstream television is at best a waste of time. Now, I'm not opposed to wasting time. I mean, watching things that are entertaining, like copper lawyer shows or sports or something like that. I mean, that's a waste of time in the sense that we're not doing anything productive. But the hell with doing things productive all the time, particularly on Labor Day, right? The Marxists always said, with some good sense, workers of the world unite. What we really need is workers of the world relax. Because the people that run things, the 400 or 500 billionaires in the world, are just cranking up the hamster wheel all the more. So people are working harder and harder and harder. In fact, nobody has ever worked as much as we have in the modern era of, quote, freedom. All right, that's what Bush was talking about, of freedom and liberty since the days of galley slaves. No one, even in feudalism, the peasants never worked that much. And they look to see, are we going to protest against this? Are we going to say anything? Are we going to let out a peep, a squeak, anything to say, look, we have lives. We don't want to spend every waking moment with our nose to the grindstone while the wealth we produce goes to this small elite that controls everything and has more money than they know what to do with. And are so pathological that they refuse to share it. In fact, greedily always want more and more and more. Well, the protests against Bushco and the Republican con were absolutely incredible. And like Seattle in 1999, and I don't know, I have to get into a weird defense of that in a way that was totally misrepresented in the media and all of that. It was the average person speaking truth to power. Because power dominates the voices in this society. They control television, radio, newspapers, and what have you. So their voice dominates everything. It shouts to the rafters. When a carefully crafted political speech is made, it becomes front page headline in every paper in America, the leading story. There's no attempt to say, well, here's what George Bush, and you could say this for the Democrats too, but the Republican thing just happened. Here is what George Bush just said. Is that true or not? How about some analysis of that? Well, you can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, and you can see a point-by-point refutation of every word of nonsense, every deliberate distortion and lie that Bush made on Thursday night. But I guess it had some impact, that the image of power, the image of assuredness, the image of projecting safety for everybody worked. But it's only an image. But image rules in this society, particularly with the domination of television everywhere. And that medium, and remember, reality's over here, you're here, and I'm here, and in between is the medium. And through that filter, there's a decision made. Well, first off, the people that are generating the image crafted in a particular way to have an effect on us. They don't want a dialogue. They don't want to talk. They don't want to discuss this. They don't want to get on an even plane with us. They want to dominate the conversation to have an effect on you so you will act in the manner that they want you to vote for who they're telling you to buy what you're supposed to buy. Those are the two main things, of course. Yeah, work, consume, and elect who they think will most serve their interests. I'm Peter Werbe. This is Night Call. 313-298-WRIF. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com is where you can go to. And you have to remember that since the image dominates in this society as it is, what someone has called the society, the spectacle, where we are the passive receptors of these images generated by this small elite. You say, well, what about you, Irby? You know, you're on the radio. You got this voice that dominates. Well, you know, radio is nothing. No one is in awe of me. Or if you are, please stop as of this moment. And people really aren't even in awe. Well, I mean, a lot of cons are, even that's our shorthand for conservatives. A lot of the cons are in awe of the people on the radio. Because they're real authoritarians, and they bow in front of authority. They love authority. They grovel in front of authority. I mean, that's the whole nature of their being. They love the assuredness. They love the big daddy. Well, that's actually not a good image for this station, is it? They love Big Brother, we'll call it, but Big Father, we'll call it. They love the Big Father figures, and they submit themselves to the authority of people in power, even when the people in power are not acting in their best interest. Well, I guess you still have to love Big Father, even if he is mean or if he takes things away, because ultimately what you love is the relationship. You submit because you've never really become a full adult, an independent, autonomous individual that thinks for themselves. And when someone tries to get over on you, when someone tries to trick you, when someone tries to take away from you what's yours, you get mad. You don't say, yes, sir. So all these badass cons, that's what they do. They are big on yes, sir. Well, they'll be real mean to people below them. That's the other end of the hierarchy. But we're talking about how they relate to the people above them. So you have this imagery, this domination of imagery. Wait, where did I see this? Oh, yeah. This is Frank Rich in the New York Times today. How Kerry became a girly man. That one, this whacked out testosterone poisoned Hulk, governor of California, the Gropinator. Isn't that what they call him? Isn't that his name, the Gropinator? Anyways, Frank Ritten, he used the phrase girly man. He used it first in California, and he thought, oh, well, that's pretty good. And so I'll use it again at the Republican con. And here's what Frank Rich says. Only in an election ruled by fiction could a sissy who used daddy's connections to escape Vietnam turn an actual war hero into a girly man. And so this is what the election is all going to be about. Images. John Kerry look French, which is sort of just a little sub rosa manner of saying gay, right? And, playing on the homophobia of a lot of the Khan constituency. Then you had in that Republican Khan that Zell Miller. I mean, I saw him. I was talking about the footnote to not watching television. DemocracyNow.org. You can watch Amy Goodman's show. And that's absolutely incredible. I don't know why I didn't get turned on to that a little more or a little sooner. I mean, I've interviewed her before, but the programs that she put out are like a parallel universe. Power on one hand, which emanates through all the networks, all the cables, is most obvious in something like Foxhole News, but it's true with all the rest of them as well, speaks for power, takes power's premises as a starting point. DemocracyNow.org, this program, lots of you don't. We say, let's look at our lives. Let's look at the country. Let's look at the world. What can be done to make it better? Who's making it bad? Who is profiting from the power and economic relations that exist today? And what kind of popular forces, forces of the people, can be mobilized to dislodge power, to have a vision of another world being possible, and then make it so? And you say, well, God, doesn't look like we're doing too good. Howard Zinn, the eminent the eminent historian, has said that we people that want peace and social justice and economic justice lose every battle and win the war. I don't even know if it's going that way, because right now we are at a critical point where we stand to have an election decided on the images of the opponent as opposed to either man's program or vision for this country. We know where George W. Bush is going. He's going to war. He's going to rob the middle class and the working class all the more. He's going to erode environmental rules. He's going to attack women's rights, and on and on and on and on. And yet, here, this poll comes out from, did I lose it already? No. Bush opens double-digit lead. The economy, 47% trust President Bush more to handle the economy, while 45% trust Kerry. I mean, this is astounding. This is planet Bush out past Uranus, somewhere out in our solar system, where 47%, almost 50% of the people think they can trust this rich kid that never did an honest day's work in his life, that got bailed out of every economic failure that he's presided over, including the United States economy. Remember when the guy that's going in for heart surgery left? There was a $100 billion surplus, and now there's what? What's the? I can't even remember what the deficit is. Give us a call. 313-298-WRIF. Remind me what the budget is. So here you have, it must be in this 47% of people that think that they can trust Bush to handle the economy, that have they not heard the news, or do they just, you put your fingers in your ears and you go, la, 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 that Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, has said that baby boomers, many of you listening, many of your parents of you listening, aren't going to be able to enjoy the benefits that you expected under Social Security and Medicare. Joanne, Don, you can get me that email. She said, I've paid in a ton. I just kind of glanced at that. Well, you're not going to get it back. Why aren't you going to get it back? Well, because it's going to Halliburton. It's going to the Carlyle Group. It's going to Bechtel. It's going to Bush's buddies. So you're not going to get what you put in. Or your parents aren't going to get what they put in. Well, I don't care. I mean, I think that George W. Bush is handling the economy just fine, and we're getting out of the recession. How about this? Medicare payments for the elderly to rise 17%. So there's probably a good, 10, 15% of you listening. Hopefully we're streaming and you're listening all around the world. So your Medicare payments are going to go up by 17%. And when you're living on Social Security, for instance, when you're not in the elite class that Bush comes from, then these dollars mean a lot. So why is Medicare payments for the elderly rising 17%? Well, that's real easy, because it says right here, most of the increase will cover the program's new prescription drug coverage and preventative service, including blah, 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 like that. So health care costs are going up, we all know that. So it makes sense, doesn't it? Well, it only makes sense if you really don't care about the elders of this society. if you want to make them pay after they've worked all their lives, so after they retire, they have to become an associate at some mega giant discount store rather than enjoying their life with their grandchildren, because all the money that should be going to them that they shouldn't have to pay a damn dime for Medicare is going off to Iraq and going off to the rich and tax cuts and what have you. Is that okay? I mean, again, I sometimes pose things like this. Is that a lie? I mean, well, you can't say it's a lie. It's rising 17%. And is it just, I mean, I suppose some of you could just say, oh, you know, too bad. Right? Now, I hope you don't get stuck in that position. By the way, you know, some of you weasels listening, sorry to be mean, but I can't think of anything else to call you. Every Monday morning, call or write my boss and say, you got to take that Orby off the air, you know, because you can't deal with what I'm saying. And all those angry Zell Millers and Dick Cheneys and, you know, the Gropinator and all of that, they're angry as hell. What the hell are they angry about? They control everything. They control the three branches of government. They control media. They control most of the wealth. And what they are, like true fascists, like the true fascists they are, they despise any dissent from the policies of the ruler. Because you got to remember, fascism isn't just enforced by military rule. That only lasts a little while. What you really need is a submissive politician that loves the dictator, that loves the ruler. People loved Stalin. People loved Mao. People loved Hitler. I don't know what percentage, but there were people that wept for weeks when Stalin died. There were people that wept when they saw Hitler. There are people in China that take the birthplace of Mao as this reverential pilgrimage site. So just the fact that people are dictatorial or mean or what have you. People love Saddam Hussein. I don't know. You know, I'm not saying that it was 100% or 40% or 70%, but there was a good solid bunch of people that loved Saddam Hussein because he represented solidity. He represented the figure of the nation. He represented no ambivalences, no ambiguity. And maybe he'd kill and torture a few people once in a while, but ultimately you never had to think for yourself. That's the way the cons in our society are. Anyways, a bunch of them, not too many, you know, 3-4 a week, they write my boss or call my boss and they say, oh, you know, you got to get Werby off the air. Because they're not interested in debate, they're not interested in dialogue, they're not interested in conversation. They want to still the voice that they don't want to hear. Because they don't want any challenge. They want assuredness. They want invariance. And that's not the way the world is. That's not the way the world is, but what can I say? What do I always say? Politics, fascist, personality, bully. Yeah. So if the shoe fits, wear it. If it doesn't, get on the phone. Give me a call. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. It's the Night Call Show. And Dan, any reason to think that we are streaming? Is our people well? Someone, all right, okay. Give us the emails from, you know, we'll say right now we're doing Morning Drive in Oulu, Finland. Jacob, welcome to the broadcast, listening as usual. And the rest of you as well here in our primary broadcast area in Detroit, Michigan, and Ontario, Ohio, Winnipeg. All right, let's go to our phones. Hi, this is WRIF and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
George W. Bush, to borrow a phrase from Saddam Hussein, is the mother of all cons.
Okay, there you go.
You know, with global warming, it's probably a good thing because that means we won't have enough ice floes to put the elderly on when they no longer serve a purpose.
Think it'll get to that, huh? Like the Eskimos did.
Oh, yeah, I think it will.
Yeah.
I mean, this bunch is, you know, they're highly pragmatic. You know, the elderly are costing us too much money.
Well, they are. They are. And,
you can't tax them out of existence either.
Right. Most societies, most industrial societies, take good care of the elderly. Here,
the Asians revere the elderly.
Yeah. Here.
You know, they take seniority. They take seniority rights to an absurd degree.
Right. Here, they are just excess baggage rather than the elders of this society, repository of wisdom deserving after a hard lifetime of labor to be respected. Instead, we're forcing them to grub for either their meds or their foods. Well, maybe they can just crack their meds in half, only take half of their high blood pressure medicine or something like that. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening. Hey, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You're on the air.
Hey, Rob. It's Rob Stern Heights.
Yeah, Rob. What's that noise?
I don't know. I've been hearing that since I was on hold. I think I'm on a cell phone, so I'll make it quick, though.
Yeah, give it to me quick, because it's kind of...
I voted for Ralph Nader in the last election, but looking at the latest poll results on this, I'm going to break away and vote for John Kerry. I don't like a lot of his issues. I wish he had a little more backbone, but, you know, we just had to have change. And if you think it's bad now, wait, and if Bush wins re-election, it's going to get a lot worse, because he's got... agenda will be clear.
Yeah, stay on the line for a minute, but I got to turn it down because it is pretty bad. Well, the Michigan Court of Appeals on Friday overruled a state elections panel and ordered Ralph Nader's name to be on the ballot as an independent presidential candidate. The majority of these signatures were collected by the Republican Party as a way to draw votes away from John Kerry. In fact, I was at the Taste Fest down in front of the Fisher Building in the old General Motors building on West Grand Boulevard around July 4th, and there was a large number of almost exclusively African-American young people going around and saying, will you sign to let an independent candidate on the ballot? And I said, who is it? And they said, an independent candidate. And I said, and I thought it would probably be a black candidate because most of the people doing it were African-American. And they said, well, it's an independent candidate. And I said, but who is it? Finally, they came out with Ralph Nader. And I said, are you in the Green Party? And they said, huh? I said, why are you doing this? And they said, oh, we're being paid. So the Republican Party, which is home to America's racists, hired black people to collect signatures in a manner to sabotage the election. These people are despicable beyond belief. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Also, let's see, the court also ordered a proposed constitutional ban on gay marriage to be on the ballot, an issue that likely will bring anti-gay and gay activist factions into a bitter public clash. Indeed it will. Thank you once again, these religious nuts that are trying to make their religion public policy. Who the hell made it the business of these right-wing Christians or the political state to determine who can be joined in matrimony? Who did that? Where did this come from? And think about this. Just another point where these people are, rather than trying to create a peaceful, loving, tranquil community, have again started this hassle. Everything they touch, they got the Midas touch in reverse when it comes to social issues. How can we rile people up? How can we make people angry? How can we separate the community? How can we use this issue? Again, this was really pushed by the Republicans because they know this will bring out their base. This will bring out the homophobics. And I'm sure Michigan, or well, am I sure? I wouldn't like to think so. But probably Michigan will disgrace itself by voting in a constitutional ban on gay marriages. So the loving men that I know, the loving women that I know, that are friends of my wife and I, will be told, you are less than a human being. In fact, to make sure that the state doesn't recognize your loving union of 20 years or so, we're going to enshrine this in our Constitution. How shameful. I just hope that we will be a shining light, that Michigan could say no to the homophobes, no to the people who, it's like all this stuff. If you don't like gay marriage, marry somebody of the opposite sex. That's what I did. Not that I don't like gay marriage, but that's the way to do it. Live by example. If you don't want abortions, don't have one, all right? Or create economic conditions so people don't want to end pregnancies or something like that. But these authoritarians always, remember what I said? Politics fascist, personality bully. They want to shove their religious views, their biological views down our throats, even if it's a minority. Sometimes it's the majority, sometimes it's a minority. But, of course, we don't want to erode traditional marriage because I know, and I won't say their names, but I know if two guys I know are allowed to legally marry in Michigan, it's just going to send my wives and my marriage down the tubes, right? That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Well, of course it does, because if gays get married, then, what is it? What's the argument against it? There's got to be one. These people just couldn't say that, they couldn't make this assertion without backing it up in some manner, could they? Would they do something so empty, so vile, so cynical, as to actually try to limit the capacity of someone to share equally in this society and have no reasons beyond it, beyond just they don't like it? Or maybe a stronger one, a little stronger, is that it's against their religious belief. But it's not against the religious belief of the people doing it. I mean, I'm near a Christian church that's predominantly gay. So there's got to be some interpretation of it all. And there's gay bishops and all that. So there's got to be some interpretation of it that says it's okay, even under Christianity. But these people, these right-wing Christians, the emphasis is on the right wing, they're going to take their theological views, they're going to intertwine it with biology and social theory, and shove it down the throat of the rest of us. And they're going to play upon the fears, which is about what mostly they're all about, and divide our community and tell these wonderful people, these loving people, these people that every day make a positive contribution, not a negative contribution by separating people, but a positive contribution to our community and enshrine legally in the constitutional founding document of the state, you're less than other people. Whew. Substitute some other group for gays and say, like they used to, blacks and whites couldn't marry. If you allowed that, everything was going to go to hell, right? That's what they said all over the South, or something else. And these people are such vile hypocrites, aren't they? Aren't they? Scandal-ridden. I mean, every once in a while, like the governor of New Jersey, there's some scandal, but, I mean, this is unusual. Scandal is about 90% Republicans. Now, these folks are also, they're not satisfied state by state. They want to enshrine in the federal founding document, the Constitution, the supervisory document of all law in this country, that two people that love them each other cannot be legally married. And what are they going to do? Here's how hypocritical they are. U.S. Representative Edward Schrock, Republican of Virginia, abandoned his bid for re-election after a weblog said he had sought sex with other men through a phone service. Now, here's a Republican resigning because he got caught soliciting phone sex. Or not phone sex, sex with other men through a phone service. So, I mean, I couldn't care less that he's doing that. I mean, do you? I mean, would you care if your legislator was having sex with anybody, men, women? It's none of your business. It's the other thing that these cons are. They're busybodies, always butting in. They're buttinskies. They're always butting into other people's business as well. But here's the deal. Representative Schrock, the Republican, he's married. I don't care about that either. Co-sponsored a proposed constitutional amendment banning gay marriage and has advocated barring homosexuals from military service. Does it get more hypocritical than this? Here he is, Republican U.S. Representative Ed Schrock, Republican of Virginia, married, co-sponsoring a proposed constitutional amendment banning gay marriage and advocating barring homosexuals from military service, isn't going to run for re-election because he got caught dead to right seeking sex with other men through a phone service. By the way, he's a retired Navy officer as well. You want to go check this all out, the weblog. It's called Blog, B-L-O-G, blogactive.com. Has vowed to reveal the identities of lawmakers who are gay and support anti-homosexual legislation. An aide to Mr. Schrock said he's not gay. Whatever. All right, we'll be right back.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit. Don't miss the film critics are hailing as the seminal movie for this generation. Rolling Stone calls Garden State hilarious, 4 stars. It illuminates a young man's coming of age with unexpected depth and grace, as the LA Times.
You know that point in your life when you realize the house you grew up in isn't really your home anymore? That idea of home is gone. Maybe that's all family really is. A group of people that miss the same imaginary place.
Soundtrack available on Epic Sony Music Soundtracks, featuring new cuts from Fru Fru, so let go, jump in. The Shins, Remy Zero, and Thievery Corporation. Zach Braff, Natalie Portman, Peter Sarsgaard. Garden State, rated R. Under 17 requires accompanying parent or adult guardian. Now playing.
Why are men all over America talking about Testosterpro? Listen.
After I tried Testosterpro, I felt like I was the man I wanted to be. I wish I'd found out about it sooner, because I feel like I'm more of a man now than when I was younger.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. In many men, testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35. But now there's Testosterpro, the complete performance boosting system I designed for men who are starting to feel their age. If you don't feel like the man you used to be, call now for a 30-day risk-free trial of the Testosterpro system, which includes my bonus report on aging and its effects on energy, sex drive, and stamina, free with your order.
Call now for your confidential trial of Testosterpro. 1-800-897-3124. 1-800-897-3124. Results will vary. 1-800-897-3124. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-897-3124.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby coming up next.
It's September 2004. David Hall reporting for the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Hey, I know it's late night, but guess what? Late night, you can go to rockfinancial.com. That's right. Our website, rockfinancial.com, has got all kinds of information for you, whether you're thinking about purchasing a new home, you want to refinance your current home, you want to consolidate some debt. Hey, maybe you just want to jump on there and use those mortgage calculators to see how much home you can afford or how much you'd save by refinancing. Rockfinancial.com, it's a great resource to go to get information about your mortgage. The mortgage experts, we're always working around the clock, 24 hours a day. That's why you can go to rockfinancial.com to get information, whether you want to do a 30-year fixed, a 5-year arm, a 3-year arm. Maybe you want to find out about that new low introductory rate that I'm sure you've been hearing about from the mortgage experts. If you want interest-only options, they're on there too. Go to rockfinancial.com tonight. That's 24 hours a day. You can punch us up on the web. rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
Here's how it works.
There was a cop outside his car back there watching. Must have radioed ahead. It was too late. I was busted.
You've just been pulled over in a safety belt enforcement zone. You'll find hundreds of them across Michigan, in every city, on every street. Here's how it feels.
Well, you're sitting here pulled over. Feels stupid. The seatbelt.
Because in a safety belt enforcement zone, they're looking for one thing. And if you're not buckled up, you'll be pulled over. That's for certain. Here's what it costs.
And the cop said it's going to be like $65. Man, I got to work all day to make $65, you know?
You'll pay up $65. So save yourself the hassle. Save your money. Save your life. It's your choice. Buckle up or pay up.
Enforcement zone's in effect. Click it or tick it.
A message from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. We are streaming. Kathy, listening in Green Bay, Wisconsin, says we are doing it, among many that we've gotten. At calltalkyes@yahoo.com, Matt writes in, I'm a conservative Republican. I listen to your show every week. I like listening to different opinions, but it seems like most of your show is a rip on Bush. How about you and Kerry start talking about the issues at hand for the American people? Well, I certainly wish that things were going in that direction. This from AmericanProgressAction.org. AmericanProgressAction.org. Dick Cheney devoted 50 words of his speech to health care, 92 to the economy, 102 to education. The number of words Cheney devoted to personally attacking and distorting the record of John Kerry, 671. And if you really care about that, if you really care about that, Matt, you ought to begin with the Republicans. Every once in a while, I'll go by one of the conservative attack dog talk show hosts, and there is not a word about Kerry proposal. Now, I think, you know, the Democrats who don't have that killer instinct have to start pressing on the issues and get out of this stuff that I can't remember the phrase I'm looking for, but they want this, the Republicans want this election to be about images, the images of 9/11, of security, of terrorism, and what have you. And try to, can we not talk about the fact that in about, I don't know, what is it now, 3 or 4 months, that George W. Bush will be the first president since the Depression era and the Republican president Herbert Hoover to have presided over a net loss of jobs in the United States, the fact that health care costs are going up for our elderly, that more and more people have fallen into poverty, that the middle class average income has dropped, and on and on. Yeah, I agree with you. That's what we should be talking about. Let's see. Dean from Royal Oak says, the deficit is $500 billion. All right, that's half a trillion. We're all going to pay for that, or our kids are, and our kids' kids. Whatever happened to the hunt for bin Laden? That name was never mentioned during the entire Republican con this whole last week. Because Osama bin forgotten. Although, do I have that here? let's see. Oh, yeah. Here's that. U.S. official, U.S. capture of bin Laden close. The United States and its allies have moved closer to capturing Osama bin Laden the last 2 months, according to a top U.S. terrorism official said in a television interview. Well, do you think, you just think there's maybe a bit of a chance that they'll pop Osama bin Laden out of wherever he's been in right before the election? No, come on. Would they do that? Yeah, they would. All right, let's go to Jeff Saxon. Jeff Saxon was my host last night at Detroit Rock City, where the second and third installment of Liberal Palooza took place. A good night, huh, Jeff?
Yeah, it was a great night, Peter. How you doing?
Good. Now, let me ask you a question. We're on the air, so you got to answer honestly. Did I talk too short? I know, you know, people usually talk too long. But there was some listeners that had come down from Central Michigan to hear me, and I wanted, what did I talk for, about 6 or 7 minutes?
It was a little brief, but you don't want to talk too much then.
Yeah, it was a music show, right? Yeah. You got together these bands. Remind us just a little about Liberal Palooza and what you've been doing out there at Detroit Rock City.
Well, getting together a bunch of bands, five bands, each show that agree with us that Bush has got to go, and in united sedition, voicing our opinions. You know,
yeah, it's good to do. It's happening all over the country. Of course, it's happening with the big time rock bands, Bruce Springsteen and Pearl Jam and the rest. John Mellencamp going to be coming in here Sunday, October 2nd. And on the other hand, groups like that you had last night, give them a shout out. Remind me who the bands were.
Last night we had Arete, Bruce, Blind Leads Naked. Let me think. Elysium.
Yeah. Yeah. All
it was
good.
A great show. It was the best one yet. Good,
yeah.
Turnout.
And just had Ray Street Park was in here on our Motor City Riffs program, and they said, hey, if you can do a benefit for something, let us know. So it's out there. Next one is when? October 2nd? It is.
So What did you think of Liberal Blues your first time out, Peter?
I loved it. I loved it. Anyway.
You going to be up the next one?
I'll see if I can do it. Sure.
Well, you're welcome to come out and give us some more words, cause more encouragement. Encourage these young voters to get out and vote.
Indeed, and I'm a proud recipient of the Liberal Palooza F. Bush shirt. I brought it home, and my wife said, "You going to wear that in public?" I said, "I shouldn't I?" And she gave me this look. At least I'm not going to be wearing it when I'm with her.
Well, I've proudly worn it out at Pine Knob for the Kiss concert, for the Cure concert, and people either look at me and don't have a reaction, or they say, "Hell yeah."
All right, Jeff Saxon, thanks a lot. You can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, and remind us again, your website?
Is anyonebutbush2004.us.
All right, thanks, Jeff Saxon, and thanks for hosting these things.
All right, thanks, Peter.
All right, bye now. All right, let's continue on. 313-298-WRI. Have you had a good time out there? Talk to some people and hey, there's hope. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. You referenced earlier the polls that represent this, that, and the other. I feel like I'm living in a dreamland because my personal experience and the people I know, and I have relatives and friends from New Jersey to Oregon, are not experiencing what the polls are showing, that we are not in prosperity, et cetera. And keeping in mind that both Bush and Kerry are members of the families that are sometimes referred to as the Gnomes of Zurich, I think Senator McCain made a very interesting comment the other night on some talk show where he was asked about a comment he made that was rather kind to Senator Kerry. And he said, "I think Senator Kerry would make a fine president. With Mr. Bush, you have experience and you have seen what he does."
Mm-hmm.
He did not say you have seen the good works that Mr. Bush did or the wonderful job. He just flatly stated you have seen what he is. You have seen him. You now have his experience. It was so flat, I was amazed. He did not make it sound wondrous. And I thought if we just would read between the lines, he is stating something out loud here. What has lulled us into this complacency that we read a poll and go, oh, that's the way it is?
Yeah.
I was a bookkeeper when there was another Republican in office saying, I'm dropping taxes. Yeah, I believe it was Reagan or Bush Sr., and we got new tax forms in where I took taxes out of the people's checks, and it was more.
And well, these people literally think they can say anything, and they do. Remember, these are the people that say Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Now they it was a gathering threat. They don't even say, they don't give any idea in the slightest why it was a gathering threat. I mean, it wasn't. But on Iraq, 53% trust Bush to handle the situation in Iraq. Well, we just had two more young Americans killed, 16 wounded, and people trust Bush. Maybe this is insane, or maybe it's in a different part of the country. I run into people, and I say, hello, how are you? And they don't tell me how they are. They begin raving about how much they hate Bush and how bad the country is. And these aren't my rad friends or anything like this. These are school teachers and newspaper reporters and cab drivers and bartenders and what have you, musicians. There is this depth of, I don't even know what you call it. All right, well, thank you very much. Listen up. I want to tell you something that has to do with this trust of Bush on terrorism. Now, U.S. Senator Bob Graham, he helped launch the joint inquiry with the House Intelligence Committee that produced the report on intelligence failures. Now, this was presided over by George W. Bush. No matter how you cut it, slice it, or dice it, the person in charge of our security on September 11, 2001 was George W. Bush. His hand-picked commission, headed by ex-Governor Keene of New Jersey, a Republican, faulted the Bush administration for its I hate when I summarize things as opposed to reading things. But essentially, what they did is they said that there was a lack of preparedness and awareness on the part of George W. Bush's administration. And when I say this, people say, well, Clinton, they said the same thing about Clinton. Yeah, except that Clinton wasn't president. Gore wasn't president. The person that presided over the most catastrophic intelligence failure and strike on the United States was George W. Bush, and then you get this stuff that people trust Bush to handle this stuff. How about this? U.S. Senator Bob Graham, as I said, who launched the Florida Democrat, who helped launch the inquiry, he says that the Bush administration has taken every step to shield Saudi Arabia from links to September 11th attacks. He's got a new book out called Intelligence Matters, and he says he makes the case to the extent to which Saudi Arabia was a key part of making 9-1-1 happen. Michael Moore said that, right? And everybody, oh, what does he know? Well, here is a prominent United States senator, not given to conspiracy theories, not given to wild charges. And he says, this administration has taken every step to obfuscate, avoid, and cover up Saudi Arabia's actions. It's because they're pals with the Bushes. It's because the Crown Prince Abdullah gives Laura a $100,000 necklace this year. Or I guess it was last year, 2003. Excerpts from Graham's book, which goes on sale Tuesday, showed that at least two of the hijackers had support from Omar al-Bayoumi, whom the senator called a Saudi government spy and said was a ghost employee of a Saudi contracting firm. The owner of the firm is a supporter of Osama bin Laden. John Kerry said if the White House and the FBI did, in fact, block an investigation into the ties between the Saudi government and 9/11 hijackers, this is a massive abuse of power. In Graham's book, again, which is called Intelligence Matters, he makes clear that some of the details, makes clear that some details of that financial support from Saudi Arabia were in those 27 pages of the Congressional Inquiry's final report that were blocked from release by the administration. That's what it said in those 27 pages, that there were these links, these direct links, and the Bush administration has suppressed them. And then you look at this, and it says two-thirds said they approve of how Bush is handling the war on terrorism. How do the people in New York think about this? Half of all New Yorkers believe U.S. leaders had foreknowledge of impending 9-1-1 attacks and consciously failed to act. Consciously failed to act. They knew this was happening, and they consciously failed to act. Two-thirds of New Yorkers and 56% of people overall said there's still unanswered questions. I guess so. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, Mr. Positive.
How you doing, Mr. Positive?
Good, sir. Now, bear with me. I know that you might be, you might get a little
just tell me.
Okay.
Just tell me.
Are you?
Or have I ever been? Go ahead.
Are you a socialist? Are you a communist? Answer the question.
If when anyone demands this in the manner of like Joseph McCarthy of the 50s, the first thing I almost want to do is refuse to answer. But the way I answer that facetiously, I'm much more radical than either of those groups.
What do you mean? Don't play word games.
Word games with you.
Tell me, are you a socialist? Are you a communist? You know the difference between your position that you're espousing and a socialist and a communist. For instance,
tell me.
You don't seem to want people to make lots of money, but yet you can't define how much is enough, number one. Number two, who makes that decision? Number three, if you make the decision, are you any worse than a dictator or an oligarchy or someone that controls what I want to do?
So you think there ought to be no limit on the accumulation of wealth?
Should there be no limit on accumulation of wealth?
To answer the question.
Of course I will. Without infringing upon someone else's rights. Doing what the capitalistic system provides you to able to do.
Well, the capitalistic system, for instance, in the 19th century, when there was an enormous, enormous disparity of wealth, we're heading back that way, where there was this little rich class, this very small middle class, and then this enormous working class that had to work 12, 14 hours a day, that got paid a pittance, that had the wealthy had no income tax on them whatsoever. And what happens, of course, is that wealth buys power. Wealth is power. Power operates to protect wealth. So what began in the progressive era, in the early part of the 20th century, was to have what they called progressive income tax. The more you made, the more you paid. And up until 1960, for instance, if you made over $5 million, we're talking about this last week, tax on every million over five was 90%. There was a social decision made that wealth of that magnitude distorted democracy, and well it does, because now we have this entrenched oligarchy, this plutocracy, this elite rich class that determines almost everything that happens to all of us. And do I think that people ought to be able to have unlimited wealth? Absolutely not. And in that sense, having the state be the arbitrator of that, of how much wealth people can have, by making a decision about how people are rewarded. In other words, the state makes a decision that people can be paid as low as $5.15 an hour. I would say that people that in the wealthiest country in the world, we ought to have the highest minimum wage. So we ought to immediately say, hey, make two laws. One, that the minimum wage ought to be about $13.50 an hour for, say, companies, and yeah, I'm saying this off the top of my head, companies with more than 50 employees, and that companies are in fact, they wouldn't even have to do this, but what people always say, they would pass along these labor costs to the consumer. But because whenever they raise the minimum wage, that's always what the conservatives say. If you raise the minimum wage, prices are just going to be raised to compensate for it. And that never happens. But you could have a law that says you can't do this. What has to happen is the ultra-rich have to make less money so that the vast majority of us can have the fruits of our labor. That because the social power of the wealth suppresses the ability of the average American to have a living wage, a decent wage, free from debt, free from worry about where we're going to get health care, where we're going to be able to send our kids to college, whether we're going to be able to afford what people need to go to school and what have you. So you support this this capitalist oligarchy. If we're going to be stuck with capitalism, and it's certainly not my favorite system, at least we ought to have control on the worst greed coming out of it. All right, got to go. Thank you, Mr. Positive. Stay positive.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back right after this.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tenney Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn, featuring great American food and great American music. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now. Have your credit card handy and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
My poor dad, he lives in the upstairs office working all day.
And I'm like, come on down, Dad, catch some rays.
Sorry, I'm like a bat in a cave up here.
So I drag him to CompUSA. Awesome prices on laptops, iPods, all the gear you need to get out and live. Look, Dad, a wireless network.
Hey, there's no wires.
Yeah, you can work anywhere, in or out of the house. And CompUSA will even come over and install it for nothing.
Nothing? I can afford nothing.
So now he's always working outside. Right next to me.
Hey, Kyle, look at this cool spreadsheet.
Dad, can't you, you know, work inside for a change?
Now at CompUSA, buy any wireless network and get free in-home installation. That's a $100 value. And get a Netgear wireless G router for under $30 after savings and rebates. Plus a 4-megapixel digital camera with optical zoom is under $150. Certain conditions apply. See store for details. CompUSA. Simplifying the business of life.
Have you felt the power of music? The magnificent sound of a symphony? The perfectly played notes that send shivers down your spine. This is the power of music. And you will feel it at the DSO. Join us and share in an amazing evening of music as conductor Neyme Yerby opens the season with Orff's rousing masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Be there for this moving and memorable performance as our maestro kicks off his final season with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's Carmina Burana, Thursday through Sunday, September 9th through the 12th. Feel it, the power of the DSO at the Max. For tickets, call 313-576-5111. That's 313-576-5111. Or visit DetroitSymphony.com.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible...
Pretty sharp stuff in there. See, John writes in from Madison Heights, the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com. One of the more interesting protests in New York that I heard about, pardon me, was a public reading of the Constitution by a number of people, including some celebrities. The crowd cheered at places like the First Amendment, the right of people to peacefully protest. All the newspapers, even the New York Times and the mayor, were complimenting the New York police on how restrained they were. In other words, they didn't go crazy and beat the crap out of people that were daring to express their constitutional right through public demonstrations. Well, it wasn't all quite that nice. And Mayor Bloomberg of New York said he wanted to welcome everyone, the people that were coming to protest and, of course, the people that were coming to the Republican con. However, they weren't quite as welcoming to the protesters. Now, when you see a lot of people on normally orderly streets that are usually devoted to people walking and commerce and what have you, suddenly there's thousands and thousands of people chanting and they have signs and all of that. The more orderly minded are kind of challenged and threatened by it, but they're almost always pretty harmless. And the idea that, for instance, as soon as people started to group up, cops would ride in with motorcycles, throw nets around people. They arrested like 1,800 people and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe the vast majority of people, who were doing absolutely nothing. There was a friend of mine from Knoxville, Tennessee. John, I hope you're out and finally. In fact, I know you got out on Friday finally. He was standing at some little incident that was blown way out of proportion. He was holding a sign. He's committed to nonviolence as a personal philosophy. And suddenly, from behind, he was slammed to the ground by 3 of New York's so-called finest. His wrist was injured, and it's in a cast now. And he was charged with what? Assaulting a police officer. Felonious assault of a police officer. In fact, come on. Some of you, a lot of you guys that are cops that are listening know that anybody... There's always exceptions. The vast majority of people that are charged with assault on a police officer had the crap kicked out of them by the cops. And particularly if that's not as quite as true in everyday life, it is almost exclusively true at demonstrations. Because if you think that demonstrators in shorts and flip-flops are going to attack a heavily armed, physically fit man, it only is out of this prejudicial sense that somehow demonstrators are crazy. Except this one had 500,000 people at it. It was a nonviolent mass uprising against the Republican Party that said, why the hell are you having it in New York? And did anybody ever come back to that? Why were the Republicans having it in New York? Well, they thought it would be a great idea when they first thought of it. They could play on 911. And, of course, they realized that the antipathy that the people of New York had for them. I mean, it was, I forgot what, something like 75 or 80% of the people supported demonstrations against the Republicans. And we were just talking about 911. And how in the world could people say they support Bush's efforts against terrorism when in the first place, either through misfeasance or even malfeasance, he allowed this to occur? He then diverts attention from the perpetrators by sending troops into Iraq for no reason whatsoever. Everyone who was paying attention, which is maybe about a third of the population, knew that this was a preposterous lie, that Iraq had either anything to do with 911 or represented any threat or had any weapons of mass destruction. But this is, you know, this is Bush world, out past Uranus. And the fact that so many Americans buy into this is truly disturbing. You expect that fascistic third of the population. Well, maybe then it's just another 15% or so who says that. Iraq, that's going swimmingly. We're bringing liberty and freedom and justice and all that good stuff as well. But U.S. troops in Iraq see highest injury toll yet. So while this celebration of Iraq's freedom is going on, 1,100 U.S. soldiers and Marines were wounded in Iraq during August, by far the highest combat injury toll for any month since the war began, and an indication of the intensity of battles flaring in the urban areas. So there's this mass uprising again, except this is a violent uprising against occupation troops, that of our soldiers that are thought they were going to be defending the United States, instead have expended their lives and their limbs and their sanity for this big lie of the Bush administration. Now, the sharp rise in wounded was the first time accompanied by a far less steep climb in battlefield fatalities. Well, we're about 21 away from 1,000 battle deaths or 1,000 U.S. deaths in Iraq. And I asked last week, how many of you conservatives or how many lives are you willing to lose for bringing, quote, freedom to Iraq? Because it ain't happening. One by one, Iraqi cities become no-go zones for the U.S. This is a headline. The city on there just talks about the city. The city under discussion was Samarra, a small metropolis north of Baghdad. In the heart of the area called the Sunni Triangle, Samarra is the most recent place where the American military has decided that pulling out and standing back may be the better part of valor, even if the insurgents take over. And the insurgents do. In Iraq, the list of places from which American soldiers have either withdrawn or decided to visit only rarely is growing. Fallujah, where a Taliban-like regime has imposed a rigid theocracy. Ramadi, where the Sunni insurgents appear to have the run of the city. The holy Shiite cities of Karbala and Najaf in the south. And on and on and on. The calls are rising for Americans to pull out of even more areas, notably Sadr City. Now, Muqtada, what's his name? I don't have it in front of me. Is it Muqtada? Sadr, the young cleric who is leading this insurgency. It's named after his father, who was executed by Saddam Hussein. So it's not like he's some Saddam guy or something. He hates Saddam Hussein. Muqtada it is. Muqtada al-Sadr. Sadr City is this million-person slum in the middle of Baghdad. And it's essentially ruled by the insurgents. So Bush really has a handle on this, doesn't he? I was going to read a lot. I should get back to the phones. But I was going to read a lot of this. But you know what? It's all just in one sentence in the headline. Young Republicans support Iraq war, but not all are willing to join the fight. How about that? Young Republicans support the Iraq war, but not all are willing to join the fight. In this whole article, a few of them said, well, they might consider it. But 20-year-old Jeff Schaefer, a University of Pennsylvania student, said vital work needs to be done in the United States. There are Republican policies to maintain and protect and an economy to sustain, Schaefer said. So he's not going off. He's going to let somebody else's son or husband or wife or daughter or whatever. But these Republicans got better things to do. That's what Dick Cheney said as he scammed out of the Vietnam War draft, all the while supporting it. And these guys are called chicken hawks. They're hawks because they support war. They support other people invading other countries and taking the deaths and the severe injuries. They're never going to do it because they want to be presidents of corporations. They want to be politicians. That's what they mean. They have better things to do. So this is a new generation of chicken hawks. These young Republicans, they support the war, but not all are willing to join the fight. Actually, this headline should have said, particularly after reading this article, but few are willing to join the fight. All right, let's go back to our pardon me, phone lines. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Kim calling from Dearborn Heights.
Hi, Kim.
Hi there. You kind of raised the point that I wanted to ask a question about, but I first want to preface this by saying I don't watch TV, and I forced myself this week. And I have to tell you, I sleep soundly. I had nightmares after watching this Republican convention.
They're scary guys.
It's like Alice in Wonderland. What's up is down. What's down is up. The misogyny, the tone of the thing, it was terrible. But this is my question. We've been on the corner of 9 Mile and Woodward for almost 2 years, every Monday night, vigiling. And this is going to sound like I'm stereotyping, but I have to raise this question because maybe someone can provide an answer.
Sure.
You know, you sort of get a demographic swing of how things go. And I have to say, you know, we're getting more and more and more positive votes that are anti-Bush. But this is my question. All along, motorists, women, African Americans, down with Bush. What is it with young white guys in SUVs? And the level of conversation a lot of times is just, you know, what about 9/11? There's no engaging in any kind of intelligent discussion. You know, what about 9/11? Go marry a effing Arab. This is where it goes. And, you know, maybe someone can shed some light on this. It's fear-driven.
It's meatheadism.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, it's people that, again, driven by anger and fear. Fear, which then generates anger and rage, hostility towards women, hostility towards minorities, hostility towards people that are daring to challenge the people in power. And when someone says, what about 911? You go, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So what? I mean, let me tell you, people, if you're still thinking that Saddam Hussein or Iraq had anything to do with 9-1-1, I would quote only one person that would have perhaps be an authority figure enough to convince you. George W. Bush, who said that Iraq had nothing to do with 9-1-1. The president's 9-1-1 commission said the absolute same thing. So if you're going around saying that 9-1-1 had anything to do with Iraq or Saddam Hussein, you're an idiot. You sound like a stupid person,
yeah.
So get out of it.
Yeah, and it is these young Republican types. I mean, we've got people on the corner, you know, Veterans for Peace. We've got a woman whose husband is over there now. And there's just no willingness to engage in any level of discussion, and it's just so, so fear-driven. You know, I vacillate between rage and almost compassion and pity because I can't believe people could be so ignorant.
Yeah, it is a shame. So you're going to be out there, what about, it's Labor Day tomorrow. You're going to be out there?
Every Monday.
What time?
We start about 4:45 and go until 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right on the corner of 9 and Woodward.
Yeah, actually, I went out to this anti-Bush demonstration in Taylor, Michigan last Monday.
Yeah.
And they actually had like 17,000 people there, but I think they bust in all these evangelicals. And we had a fairly small group with anti-Bush signs, and I would say that it was 20-1 in terms of people that responded positively to negatively. In other words, people were responding very positively.
Yeah, we were last week on last Sunday at Eureka and in Southgate. And you know, it was a mixed response. You know, one idiot pulled, well, one guy pulled his car over and said, you know, Bush is God. And you always get a few of those.
Well, people like that probably won't even vote. They just, you know, there are also some people that are so, I don't know, so cynical, so filled with loathing that that they just hate anybody that stands for anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's, I want to put a quick plug in for Women in Black this Saturday, Greektown at noon.
Yeah, this Saturday. Oh, the 11th.
Yep.
That's right. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. And if you want to see some of this stuff, you can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. And, oh, by the way, some of you weasels that write my boss and say I should be taken off the air, which he ain't going to do, rather than you calling 313-298-WRIF, it wasn't like huge masses of people came out and because I was announcing this on my show. In fact, I always wonder. I mean, I get hundreds of emails, people saying how much they appreciate the show and what an alternative is and everything like that. But I don't know. You know, I'm not doing this for entertainment. I said earlier I could have had this night off. I do this because these are ideas that rarely, the kind of ideas that I'm putting forth in the majority of callers, that rarely get expression in mainstream media. So I think it's very important to have these voices because we represent, depending on what times, either a substantial minority or very frequently a majority, but we are marginalized because of the manner in which the media is controlled by conservatism. If it's not, I mean, actually, I don't want people to go, what do you mean? I thought the media was liberal. Well, it's not. And they're terrified to... criticize people in power. They're terrified that they will be considered liberal. So they always give much, much more slack to these conservatives. Here, writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, Andrew says, I've never met a conservative who worshipped a radio host like Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh. Are you serious? For one thing, Rush Limbaugh, I mean, these guys call themselves ditto heads. Ditto heads. This self, is that the word abnegation? Is that, am I pulling for too big a word? Just prostrating themselves in front of these authority figures who are just these lying idiots, Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. On the other hand, I've met Pinkos, commies, and others of the extreme left, like yourself. I'm so far left, Andrew, I fell off the spectrum. You came and put me on there. Who absolutely worship apologists for terror and mass murder like Noam Chomsky. Slander. Check out Chomsky, C-H-O-M-S-K-Y, and historical revisionists like Howard Zinn. Howard Zinn does revise his history in a very important way. His book, A People's History of the United States, the best-selling history book in world history, actually, in publishing history, called A People's History of the United States, because it examines American history from the point of view of the ordinary people. Wow, what a concept, instead of great men, great financiers, generals, wars, and what have you. Pardon me. Terry says, when I talk to people about the gay marriage issue, there are a few that make the same statement. It is against the Bible. Yeah, might be. I don't know. I mean, how come then there's Christian gay churches? Funny thing is, these very same people, at least the ones in my life, have had sex outside of their own marriages. Joe from Gibraltar writes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. What continues to boggle my mind is how a president pushes an agenda that is so far right-wing partisan that it barely won, if at all, or didn't get the majority of votes in the first place. You'd think he'd be somewhat more bipartisan in his erratic policies. Why? He can pull off the most far right-wing attacks on everything Americans hold dear, and he still has a chance to be elected in November. Okay. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
Peter?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I've listened to you for a lot of years on and off, and I basically just wanted to call in and tell you that I appreciate your voice for, you know, those of us who have criticisms of our capitalist system like you were expressing earlier. I probably disagree with you on an issue or two, primarily firearm ownership, But I'm so refreshed to hear your voice. And
what do you think you disagree with me on firearm?
Well, I own a fair number responsibly, but and enjoy shooting and hunting. And
where have I ever said anything that I object to?
Well, about? I don't. You know, I guess I'm making an assumption there. So maybe
would it shock you if I told you I was a gun owner?
Yeah, a little bit, perhaps.
Okay.
But anyhow, the gist of my call was that I'm so appreciative of the voice you give, you know, the working class. I've been a teacher for 15 years in Port Huron, and, you know, I see firsthand the damage that our system of, you know, wealth and economics, what it's done to people, working people, you know, I love my country, but also I think that there's a lot of ways we can improve, and I really appreciate
Sure.
what you do for us.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Keep on.
Bye now. Keep on keeping on. Well, here, Jacob listening in Oulu, Finland. How did you know I was listening? Because I mentioned him at the beginning of the show. He says, are you psychic? Well, no. Truly enjoying your show as usual while I work on its website, which is a tribute to my wife of the last 37 years. Wow, she's 60 today. And if you have some time to look at it, and he gives the website, which I'll look at later. Well, happy birthday to your wife. If you would have said the name, I would have given her a shout-out by name. No need to send it in, though. I'll take a look at that website. See, Stephen writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com from Dearborn Heights. As if giving away $2 trillion from the Treasury to the rich, Bush isn't done appeasing them just yet. Twice during his speech at the convention, he mentioned making the tax system easier to understand by implementing a flat tax. Yeah, the rich really want this because they'd get even more money. Since the convention, I've seen him in campaign speeches mentioning it a few more times. It seems with all that's going wrong with this country and the world, Bush is hell-bent on giving the rich a perpetual tax cut while we all pay more. Absolutely. Okay, where are we going, Dan? Oh, it was line five. All right. Hi, WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a young Republican, and I have served in Iraq, and I currently have a brother who's serving in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say that I'm absolutely for the war because, you know, it wasn't our faulty intelligence or Bush's right-wing propaganda that led us to this war. It was Russia's Vladimir Putin who openly admitted on TV that he provided, you know, the main intelligence for this war. You know, but if I was Bush, I would have stopped and thought for a minute when Russia wanted to veto the war and they gave us the intelligence to go to war. But the fact is that...
Wait. So that Bush made a strategic error of major proportions, you're saying, that has led to the deaths of almost 1,000 of your comrades and 7,000 horrible injuries, many of which you probably witnessed.
Well, I witnessed a few. You know, I got discharged medically, so I didn't get to stay. I would have stayed and fought, but you can't really trust your allies when they're really not your allies.
Right.
You know, but...
Who would you have fought? Let me ask you, who would you have fought?
How so?
Who you say you would have stayed there and fought. Who would you have fought?
The insurgents.
Why would you fight the insurgents, or why is Bush having you and other people in the United States Army fight the insurgents? Why don't they have the right, since they're Iraqis, you're from the Detroit area, you're over there fighting people that live in this country? Don't you think that's a little strange?
Kind of, yes, but, you know, the war was going real good at first. You know, we captured Baghdad, all was great, and then all of a sudden we got slammed getting bombed and stuff. You know, I think we should leave now, but I'm saying because we don't need to lose any more lives. But the
war
was justified. And that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. He couldn't prove to the United Nations or to the rest of the world that he destroyed it.
Yeah, wait. He was. At the time Bush invaded, see, Bush wanted to invade because he knew there were no weapons of mass destruction, and he knew if the inspectors, which had been allowed free access to every area, including the presidential palaces, including all the nuclear facilities and what have you, that very soon that they would announce to the world as Hans Blix did in retrospect, that there were no weapons of mass destruction and they had no capacity to produce any. Now, in fact, there were these missiles that were had a range of like 108 miles when they could only have like 101, and they're in the process of destroying that. Bush knew there was no weapons of mass destruction. In fact, if he would have, if Saddam would have had any, he never would have sent you guys in there.
True, because, you know, the U.S. does have a tendency to pick on people who can't fight back. But, you know,
Well, knowing all this, why in the world would you support this man?
I think he was justified making his decision because Iraq did have weapons of mass destruction in the early 90s through the Clinton era. And if you recall, on December 6th, I believe it was, 1998, Clinton bombed Iraq because they threw out the U.N. inspectors and he bombed these.
No. I mean, you know, I got to tell you, your sense of history. Clinton announced he was going to bomb Iraq, and the inspectors took themselves out of there. The last thing that the inspectors said, led by Scott Ritter, who had voted for Bush in 2000 and who was an ex-Marine, ex-combat Marine from the first Gulf War, who had become the chief inspector, said there were absolutely no weapons of mass destruction left and that there was no capacity. Bush knew all this. This was a monstrous lie to justify something that never had to occur. The very fact that the army of Iraq didn't even materialize shows that it was an army of dust. It had no intention and no ability to attack anyone else, and there were no weapons of mass destruction. And now there's tens of thousands of people dead, our citizens in the army and Iraqi citizens, and now there's a civil war. These people, there's a good section, maybe the majority of them, that aren't interested in American democracy. They want to have a religious republic or even a religious dictatorship. I don't know. And those are the people that who did you say was your brother?
Is still over?
Yeah, your brother and others are fighting and killing because they don't want George Bush's or yours or my vision of how they want their country run. Well, don't they have more of a right to run their country than we do?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, well, yeah, you got me there. But I think that, you know, still that the war was justified. Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction at one point, you know, in history through the 1991 Gulf War.
Well, yeah, but then he didn't have any after that.
You know, it's kind of hard to believe a man who deceitfully, you know, like the oil for food program, he redistributed this money that was supposed to be going for...
Right. Well, who believes Saddam Hussein? Who cares what he says or what he didn't? I mean, there were UN inspectors in Iraq in March of 2003. And they were finding that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that there were nothing that... along the lines of Colin Powell and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of them said. They had long-range plans to invade Iraq. The fact that, in fact, they diverted weapons that should have been going to Afghanistan to track down Osama bin Laden in preparation for the war against Iraq. And even still, there wasn't enough, everything I've read, everything I've talked to, you guys didn't even have all the armor you needed, the personal body armor and what have you.
Saddam Hussein could not prove that he personally or his army personally destroyed these weapons. You know, they might not have been able to be found, but there's a lot of desert there that he can hide them in. And if you can't prove that they're destroyed, then how can you expect the world to, you know, refute the claim that they exist?
Well, how come I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction?
Were you a UN inspector?
No, but I took for granted that the people that were on the ground doing the inspection and were interested in finding weapons of mass destruction and found none meant there weren't any. I mean, you could say, well, maybe he sent them here, or maybe he's got them, you know, 500 feet underground. But there was no reason to suspect, because you have to have an infrastructure of a certain nature to be able to build weapons and then have weapon systems that will utilize them. And nothing like that at all was found. Certainly not 500 tons of sarin and all this other stuff that Bush and the rest of them said.
Now, that's true. But... again, Saddam Hussein had the capacity to build the weapons in the 80s and 90s. You know, granted that our president at the time gave weapons to Iraq and then to Iran, you know, back and forth.
Now, who was that? Do you remember?
It was either Nixon.
No?
No, actually, it was the first George Bush.
There you go.
However, you know, they still had, they had the infrastructure. It might have been dismantled, but you still can't say that they were destroyed because there was no paperwork or documented evidence that they were destroyed.
Well, how about going it the other way? When somebody makes a contention, I mean, you don't have to prove something like, I could say to you, can you prove ghosts don't exist? Well, of course not. I mean, the person making the assertion has to provide the proofs. And the proofs that were put forth by everyone in the Bush administration didn't hold water. They were refuted at the time. They were in the very process of refuting them. That's why Russia and France and the other countries didn't want to give United Nations okay. In fact, France said, everybody hated France. France, you know, a bunch of, whatever, you know, what was it, something or other, cheese-eating surrender monkeys and all. They said, wait 30 days. That's what they said. If this guy has weapons of mass destruction, we ought to take him out. They said, wait 30 days. We're already getting full cooperation from the Iraqi government, and you know, the United Nations inspectors are checking everything out. Let's wait 30 days. No, got to do it right now. And the result has been horrible.
Right. I don't think that any of our soldiers should have died. But, you know, I mean, Saddam Hussein, had he had the, you know, ability to produce those weapons, would again, and he might not have been as an imminent of a threat as George Bush portrayed him to be, but in the near future, I could see him as being a grave threat because, you know, with Iran building their nuclear arsenal, or if that's even really happening, you know, then they're both rogue nations, and granted they don't get along, they both share in their common interest of hatred toward the United States, so they could have, you know, sort of passed the weapons back and forth, and Saddam Hussein could have.
Those are all a lot of if comes. Did you see 911?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Did you think many soldiers have seen it? But the Pentagon was going to distribute it and then pulled out on it. They said, "Whoa, we don't." But it was a big hit at a lot of bases.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Give me your last, your final word. I got to move on.
Okay, we can just say
goodbye. I'm glad you're back. I hope everyone, particularly in your case, your brother comes back safe and sound. And, of course, our best wishes are with them all.
All right. Might I say that I appreciate listening to your non-propaganda radio talk show.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. Bye now. We'll be right back.
This is the RIS award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh?
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you mappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Attention car buyers, it's the end of the month and the quarter, and Parkway Chrysler Jeep is serious about putting you in a brand new car. With over 600 to choose from, you'll get a great deal on the one you want. How about a new Pacifica for $169 a month? Or Grand Cherokee 4x4 is only $159 a month. Jeep Liberty 4x4 is $129 a month. And PT Cruiser's only $99 a month. There's only 1 week to deal and to get your June bonus cash of $1,000. Everyone gets employee pricing and lease loyalty. Parkway will get you out of your current lease and into a new one for free. Parkway has the best selection of Crossfire convertibles and is well stocked with the all-new 300C. Parkway will beat any deal, period. Listen to this. Parkway will give you an extra $2,000 for your trade-in. Yes, the appraised value plus an extra $2,000. Parkway will do what the competitors won't. So come in today because the final days are here. You don't want to miss out on the June bonus cash at Parkway Chrysler Jeep on Gratiot at 16 and a half mile in Clinton Township, where you just show up, sign up, and ride.
Check your local paper for details.
More Night Call with Peter Werby, next on the RIM.
Peace
Riverside's wildest Wednesday night party can only be found in one place.
Join 101 WRIF this and every Wednesday night for the one and only Wild Wednesday Night Bash at Wild Woody's in Roseville.
Hey, this is Katie Morasso from 101 WRIF. Party down with yours truly at Wild Woody's. Get in on crazy contests for killer riff prizes. Enjoy wild drink specials. And this Wednesday night at Wild Woody's, get the free ticket Wednesday. Score your tickets for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Michigan Renaissance Festival tickets, concert tickets for Kitty and 40 Below Summer, passes for the new Godsmack movie Changes, and more.
Don't forget, Wednesday nights at Wild Woody's are still ladies' nights. Ladies, you walk in the door and pay no cover whatsoever.
Ladies 18 and over, welcome. Rub elbows with the most outrageous people, throw down to the hottest beats, and take in the wickedest, wildest Wednesday night mayhem in the Motor City. You know you'll only find it in one place.
Wild Woody's on Gresham in downtown Roseville.
For more info, call the Wild Woody's Wild Line at 586-294-5331.
The following is brought to you by Check and Go, solving problems one payday advance at a time.
You know that sound a busted fan belt makes? That's nothing compared to the squealing from my son's garage band, Cupid's Death Squad. I told him I'd help them out for some Battle of the Bands thing since it would get them out of the house.
Okay, let's fast forward to the part where Check and Go solves your problem.
I'm getting there. See, I never thought they'd actually win. Now they're going to Nationals, 4 tanks of gas and a van rental away. Well, payday isn't until next week, but the Nationals are this week.
Problem? Payday's next week. Solution? Check and Go this week. Call Check and Go where you can get a cash advance today and have your personal check held till payment is due. Call 1-800-561-CASH. 1-800-561-CASH. Then come to one of our nearby Check and Go branches and walk out with money in hand.
So how much does a hearing test cost?
What?
Check and Go.
Where payday is any day.
Loans made by First Bank of Delaware, an equal opportunity lender. Member FDIC.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thanks a lot. Welcome back. We'll be doing Mark Crispin Miller, his new book, an interview with him at 1 o'clock Eastern Time here in the United States. I say that because people are listening all around the world on the Internet. Hi, I'm Joe from Brighton, Michigan. I'd like to know what you think of Zell Miller's speech at the Republican National Convention, if you watched it. Actually, I saw it on Democracy Now. Man, that guy is scary. What was up with him? Why are these guys so mad? I don't get it. Kim, listening in Greenville, Michigan, says, I just started listening to you for the first time tonight. Wow, an actual liberal on the radio. Well, okay. Hats off to you. I salute you. I would kiss you if I could. I don't know what my wife will say. It doesn't take long to see that you're a true voice of reason. Topic that I wish you'd take, give some airtime. See, these are the kind of things that go below the radar, what the harm that Bushko is doing to our country. He's authorized the opening of 91 coal-fired power plants, 10 of which are in Michigan. To open them legally, he had to sign waivers for their admission because they don't meet our current standards of emissions. So he's going to be poisoning us, creating more pollution that we're going to suck in for his corporate buddies who are making a fortune off of pollution. Christine wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The Dally in the Alley, sort of the premier Cass Corridor outdoor fair, is going to be happening Saturday, September 11th, down around Wayne State University. It's, it's bordered by Forest and 2nd and 3rd and West Hancock. And she says, thanks for the Dally link on your site. Awesome. Yeah, it's a great, I think the best of all street fairs. So you can go to dallyinthealley.com or maybe .org. I think it's .com. Or go to my website, peterwerby.com. And if you go to the Detroit calendar, you'll see all the info on that. Let's see, a couple more here, and then we'll go right back to the phones. Lowell, writing from Singapore? Well, I don't know. You can say you're writing from... How do I know you're from Singapore, Lowell? This is from the Washington Post. You forgot to mention this diss of Detroit in that article you spoke about casualties, that there were over 1,000 American casualties. Here's a quote from it. They were doing battlefield urban operations in four places at one time, said Lieutenant Colonel Albert Maas, operations officer for the 2nd Medical Brigade, which oversees U.S. combat hospitals in Iraq. This is what he said. It's like working in downtown Detroit. You're going to have to go literally building to building. How about that? Detroit, in the meantime, Bush Co. going along, saying the economy's doing great. Detroit News, Detroit rated a hardship city. Urban Report cites drop in population, finds education, housing, and employment lacking. And a companion article says lower pay, lost benefits, slam ex-factory workers. One-third will land in lesser jobs. These are these jobs that are going to other countries. So this is Bush is saying things are just going swimmingly. I guess it depends on how rich you are, and since he's pretty wealthy, looks pretty good. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Jim from Madison Heights calling.
Hi, Jim.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Just want to make a point that I think a lot of people don't feel. I think a lot of people that call criticizing your viewpoints on the economy probably have been in their jobs for years, make a decent amount of money, and they don't feel it. I had a job for 17 years, lost it, thinking that I was going to retire from that company. Didn't happen. They went out of business. Now I'm taking a job just to make some money and put some money in my pocket, and I'm making about a third of the money I used to make.
Wow.
God forbid this doesn't happen to you people out there, because try to get in the unemployment line and find something making the same amount of money. It's not going to happen.
You know, I think there are any number of people, and it's always hard to, when you're just kind of hypothesizing, put any figures on it. But I think there are people that are doing all right. I mean, you go to some sections of town and everything's glitz and people are driving fancy cars and they're expanding their houses and what have you. But there are people, I think, that support Bush out of fear rather than out of, opposing him out of loathing, understanding that he has jeopardized the kind of future they thought they were going to have. They listen to him, and when this stage managed setting, and he says the economy is getting better, and they're going, yes, the economy is getting better, and it's hope, because without that they feel like they have nothing.
Right.
Yeah. So, what's missing in all of this has all come down to electoral politics rather than being mass movements of the type that protested against Bush in New York. I mean, we know that's possible. We know we can bring out 500,000, one of the largest demonstrations ever held in America, and certainly the largest one ever at a political convention. So we know, in spite of all the lies, of all the unwillingness of the media to criticize Bush in any deep manner, that people can figure this stuff out for themselves. It's just disheartening, though, when you see that close to half the people still think he's doing a fine job.
Right. And for me, I'm a single guy. My home is paid for, and I drive a beater car that I don't have a car payment. So I'm able to squeak by, but I would think, if I was married, had kids, and had a car payment and a house payment, I wouldn't be able to do it.
No, of course not. Well, no, they say that if you have, according to Bush, if you have a wife and two children, you should be able to get along on $18,000 a year.
Yeah. And yeah. I looked at my check this week, and I'm at about half that so far for the year. So.
Yikes. Well, I don't even know I was going to say good luck, but why should we have to depend on luck in the wealthiest country in the world, where we know that there are people making out literally like bandits?
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks
All right.
for your time, Peter.
Thanks, Jim, from Mad Heights. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. It's Peter Werby with you.
Hi, Peter. This is John in Cleveland.
Hi, John.
And I've been listening to you, a couple weeks. I've been hooked on this Talk Power Radio, and got a good voice. You make the program sound real good.
Well, thank you.
I had a little trouble with Malloy the other night, who was telling a young Republican he ought to commit suicide. I think that's a little heavy-handed.
That's
my make converts.
My ex-colleague Mike Malloy, who takes no prisoners.
Yeah, and there's a reasonable justification for that attitude, and I wake up with that some days, because we are in serious times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to talk to you about two things. One was, and I'll cut back to it, is somebody was talking about taxation issues and regressive, progressive, that kind of stuff. I have some comments on that. But I also wanted to relate that yesterday we were having a block party here in our neighborhood. And this is a predominantly Democrat neighborhood in a predominantly Republican suburb. But for some reason, most people around here are Democrats. And then some organizers from the DNS burst through the street barricades and passed out carry buttons to everybody. And, you know, I guess that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a woman who was my neighbor, and somebody offered her a bumper sticker. And she goes, well, no, I'm a Republican. I support Bush. And, I mean... everybody was just attacking her.
Really?
And she was like, and she's a school teacher, and she said, well, you know, where I work, this happens all the time, and people just think I'm stupid, and I just be quiet, and I don't say anything, and it's okay.
Well, to be a teacher and to support the Republican Party, you really have to have your head examined, because part of the Republican covert agenda is to destroy the teachers' unions, because they see correctly is that the teachers' union is always backs the Democratic Party. It's a part of the fundraising apparatus of the party. So, and also they'd like to turn the schools over to private corporations and religious institutions. So they despise the teachers' unions.
Yeah. Well, no, and I'm surprised, you know, somebody at school hasn't taken her aside for that. But I guess what I've been thinking lately is, I mean, you know, there's some days I wake up and I just think I'm going to be so pleasantly surprised on election day because it's going to be a landslide. I mean, I look at the crowd in New York last week and the people I talk to. Of course, I live in an urban environment. You know, you go south of the turnpike down there where the gun shops and the God Bless America and all that stuff is down there. Then you get a different picture. And even though those same people are losing their jobs at the Hoover vacuum plant or Timken roller bearing or whatever, you know, there's a lot of quiet people who I'm worried about, these sort of middle of the road, really nice, gentle people who are just quietly going to go vote for Bush.
Well, I think what has to happen, and it could happen within the debates, is that issues will come out, and hopefully Kerry will become aggressive. And apparently, from what I've read, he's been angry at his campaign managers that have said, just put forth a positive vision, talk about what a veteran you are. Of course, that started this whole row and all of that. I mean, he's got to get to the issues of the economy. He's got to get to the issue of the war in Iraq. And stop reading the polls and start talking from his heart and from his gut. Hey, John, thanks for joining us from Cleveland. I appreciate it.
All righty.
Keep listening. Please call us again, our friends from Cleveland. Well, this far away too, Matthew, listening in Sioux City, Iowa, says, why is there so little in the news about Afghanistan? Why is there no news on how the National Guard troops there have secondhand weapons and major shortages? Well, I didn't know that was the case, but Afghanistan is another disaster that is it's rapidly falling apart, once again becoming under the sway of these warlords, and Bush Co. is just helping that all of this will hold together so they can get through the election. But very possible that could turn out to be one of the wild cards. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, how you doing? This is Ron. I'm calling from the other side of the lake here in Ontario.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, I'm a avid listener. And
well, thank you.
I really appreciate everything that the Riff does, you know. I love Drew and Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, a few things I want to touch on. First off, about the war there. Like, I mean, whatever happened with this Halliburton thing, you know? I mean, like, I feel that George Bush really is got a lot of agenda under the mat that we're not seeing. Okay? That said. fact that, you know, he's just reaping the money from the budget, that's not even there. It's like
No, we're going into debt big time.
Right. Okay. And I just want to make another comparison.
Sure.
With the left and right, like up here in Canada, we've got progressive conservative or liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we've got liberal federal government.
In other words, the liberals
George Bush is not, he doesn't groove with us.
No, was very displeased that Canada would not join the coalition of the purchased.
We are part of the United Nations on that.
Sure.
Go in collaterally.
Yeah.
I really think that the war should be in Afghanistan. I mean, they've got poppy fields and stuff still just going crazy, you know.
Yeah, they just started a big harvest again. The Taliban had eliminated poppy cultivation. In fact, Bush sent $43 million of American taxpayer money to the Taliban in early 2001, like April 2001, and was hoping that they could make some arrangements where they could let this pipeline through for his oil buddies at Unocal. But then they took the money. I don't know what the hell they did with it. And then September 11th happened, so all the deals were off. Ron, I got to move along. Thanks for making our show international. Appreciate you calling in from Canada. Let's take another call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, what's going on, Peter? This is Rourke here, calling from St. Clair Shores.
Hi, Rourke.
Hey, myself and my brother just both recently were honorably discharged from the military.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just wanted to put something out there about, earlier you were saying something regarding, someone like the Republican Party or someone wanting to, somehow, like, get, gays out of military or whatever, something like that.
I forgot who was saying that. Oh, no, there was this congressman who was saying he was a retired military or naval officer, and he said he didn't want gays in the military, and then it turned out that he'd been meeting gay men through gay phone lines.
Oh, okay. Well, see, the funny thing is that while I was in the military, after, like, the first year I was in there, I met a guy, and we became friends, and... after a while, you know, he finally came forward to me and was like, hey, man, listen, you know, I'm gay, why not, blah, blah, blah. And it was the first gay person I ever met who I was friends with.
Mm-hmm.
So we still managed to be friends, why not? And then I kind of took on a whole new perception on, gay or lesbians, period. And while I was in the military and I had this friend, why not, then, you kind of get put into the circle a bit and you kind of know, like, how many people... there actually are in the military that are, gay or lesbian, whatnot.
Yeah.
And there's actually, like, a huge percentage of people who are in the military who are gay. So, like, that would make much sense, that all these people who are still Americans,
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think there's more gay men or more gay women?
There's probably more gay men. I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge, but there is like a high percentage of people who are, and then also you got people who are in the military, and they get in there and they spend like 2 years and they don't like it and they try to get out, and actually some people actually try and play that card just to get out of the military.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, you said you're honorably discharged. Can you be called back up though, in the way some of these people have?
I can. But it's probably not going to happen, because what they do is they'll call up the reservists first,
yeah,
and then they'll call up the people who were most recently discharged. So the chances of me actually getting called back up again it's not likely. And if they did, I probably wouldn't answer my phone.
A buddy of mine is a Gulf War vet in the Air Force military, or Air Force vet of the first Persian Gulf War. And I asked him, I said, because that was all coming up in the 90s about gays in the military. And I said, were there many gays? And he said, yeah, there were some. I said, anybody ever hit on you? And he said, my base commander I said, really? And I said, why did he assume you were gay? I mean, that's pretty forward. And he said that he, you know, kind of came out and said it. And then my friend Paley said, well, you know, I'm not interested in that. And the base commander said to him, okay, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't say anything about this. And anytime you need a leave or anytime you need anything extra, please come to me and I'll be sure to, you know, set it up for you.
Yeah, they have the whole don't ask, don't tell policy.
Yeah.
But then, like, I mean, there's a huge percentage of people who are gay or lesbian in the military.
Hmm.
And actually, there probably is a lot of women who are more...
Okay.
And...
Well, we probably could speculate. Actually, I'm almost to the end of the show. But, Rourke, I want to just say welcome back. I'm glad you came back without any direct harm. And stay safe.
Oh, yeah. All right, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Rourke. Appreciate it. One final call, I think, or maybe two. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Peter. Okay,
yeah.
I really enjoy your show. I have one problem with the Democratic Party, and that is I am sick and tired of seeing celebrities going for the Democrats.
Why?
I am sick and tired of seeing anybody. I don't like to see people parade for their own party. I just want to make up my own mind. I don't know who to vote for. I'm lost in the middle. I need to tell you why... Who I should vote for and why. I don't know who.
Well, I don't know. I mean, wouldn't I be in that category? You know, somebody who's in the public.
I really enjoy your show, but when I look at the TV and I see Ben Affleck and George Clooney parading for the Democratic Party or Tim Robbins, it really pisses me off.
How come?
I don't like to see celebrities. I don't really care. Pretty much. I'm like, why do I care who you're for?
Well,
I care who I'm for.
Well, you're right. I mean, that is a consideration. On the other hand, we live in this star-studded society where we put so much emphasis on these people that entertain us. And they have every right in the world, of course, to make their views known. But you're right. Nobody should say, oh, Bruce Springsteen is doing a concert against Bush, so I'm going to vote for Kerry. That's not why. I mean, what you have to do, obviously, is examine the issues.
Yeah, and I have more probably Republican views than I do Democratic.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if Kerry gets into office, what is he going to do that's going to make a difference in Iraq?
Well, I don't know. I would, because it's such a mess, and the mess began 20 years ago under Reagan and the first Bush, that I don't know what in the hell you could do. I mean, there was a soldier on that before that said we ought to just get out of there before there's any more American deaths. And things would probably go to hell. Things are probably going to go to hell with us there. So it's literally damned if we do and damned if we don't. And I'll tell you, given what Bush has done to the economy, given how badly he's fared in this, what he's called the war against terror, that both Iraq and Afghanistan going to hell, that I think that we're less safe than we were, what Kerry could do or what I could do or what you could do or anyone could do just stepping in there and all, you know, we got a $500 billion deficit, man, that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
That's going to be real tough. In fact, I think their fallback strategy is, the Republicans, is things will be so crappy under, in general, that that'll just set the stage for Baby Bush, for Jeb to take over. Hey, I got to end the show. Just keep, you're right, don't pay any attention to Ben Affleck. Don't pay any attention to me. Check out some stuff. Check out the website and check out mine. Check out the Republicans, the Democrats, and you know, it's just important that we all stay away from those stuff about people's personality and figure out, just as you're very, very accurately saying, we got to figure out what are the policies, what are the issues. So thank you very much for being our last caller.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. All right. Sorry if any of you got stuck on hold there, but maybe we can get you next week. I'll be checking email if you want to send me stuff. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Stay tuned. I'll be right back to introduce Mark Crispin Miller, who will be our first interview on Night Call. WRIF in Detroit.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever. On your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's five convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a Silver Medal Award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are four unforgettable courses, three of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week, or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually, it should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were... But man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101.1. Riff. Rocks. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101, The Riff, unleashes a ticket glitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-W.
Who felt the power of music? The magnificent sound of a symphony. The perfectly played notes that send shivers down your spine. This is the power of music. And you will feel it at the DSO. Join us and share in an amazing evening of music as conductor Nene Yerby opens the season with Orff's rousing masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Be there for this moving and memorable performance as our maestro kicks off his final season with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's Carmina Burana, Thursday through Sunday, September 9th through the 12th. Feel it, the power of the DSO at the max. For tickets, call 313-576-5111. That's 313-576-5111. Or visit DetroitSymphony.com.
WRIF Detroit, Peter Werby here with you as we continue. By the way, I'm going to that concert. It ought to be really wild. We got some interviews for the next hour. Stay tuned.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. We were just treated to the Republican convention over this last week. Oftentimes I play these again. This is going to be very, very, as you can tell by the subject matter, very, very time specific. But I thought it's important to get some critical views of what just went on. The event of the Republican convention in New York City at the beginning of September. Joining me is Mark Crispin Miller. He's been on the show before. I think the last book we spoke to him about was his wonderful Bush Dyslexicon, and he has a brand new book out. It's called Cruel and Unusual, Bush Cheney's New World Order. It's a privilege and a pleasure to welcome back Mark Crispin Miller. Mark, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, thanks so much for having me back.
I should say as well, you are a professor of media studies at New York University,
right,
and you live in New York City, and you know, I think the last time we spoke, I'd asked you, where were you on September 11th, 2001, and I believe, was it you that said you actually saw one of the planes?
One of them flew right over my building.
Yeah.
I was at home when it happened. It was a nightmare.
So
and it was, you know, for that reason, especially troubling to me that it was so thoroughly exploited this past week by the Republicans. I thought it was obscene, really.
Yeah, and so this is not just as you could say an academic matter. This is in many ways very personal.
Oh, for me, it's entirely personal. Yeah.
Well, all right, let me, a lot of my, I'll play the devil's advocate. A lot of my listeners think I am as it is, but in many ways, in that awful day on September 11th and America coming together, Bush was the president at the time, and they are a bunch of politicians like the people in the other party. So on both levels, to celebrate the renewal after September 11th, and also as a political background, why is it illegitimate?
Well, it would be illegitimate for any party to wear 9/11 on its sleeve, so to speak. But in this particular case, it's far worse because of the specifics of Bush's relationship to that day and his relationship to New York. This is a guy who did ignore some 40 warnings beforehand about the likelihood of an attack by Osama bin Laden. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing the 9/11 Commission. This is a guy who then worked diligently with Dick Cheney to prevent a commission of inquiry from taking place, and then when it was permitted, they ensured that it would be as weak as it could be by limiting its schedule to, I think, 18 months and giving it a very small budget and then, you know, refusing to hand over all kinds of papers. In fact, in my new book, I talk a great deal about that whole episode. Furthermore, the president has done nothing for the firemen and the cops, the rescue workers. He actually cut the budget as far as special funding for them is concerned. A lot of them developed respiratory problems, for example. He's treated them the way he treats the veterans of this country and the soldiers. He has no problem using them, you know, as a backdrop for his performance of compassion and heroism. But as soon as he turns around, he does something to indicate quite clearly that he's not going to waste any money or energy on them. You know, I think it's very, very exploitative.
Well, I saw a Zogby poll, a recent one, and they said that 50%, almost 50% of New Yorkers think that Bush and Cheney knew about the events of September 11th in advance and purposely did nothing. I mean, whether they did or didn't, it's an astounding figure that many people would have a view of the cynicism of the people that rule us.
Well, I having written now two books about them and having, you know, studied American politics for quite a while, I have to say that the cynicism of this administration is mind-boggling. And I'm not speaking as a Democrat because I'm actually not a Democrat. I'm an independent. and you know, I have my beefs with the Democrats. But the point of my new book, in fact, is precisely that we have an administration unlike any other in American history, and I'm afraid that too many Americans, both liberal and conservative, don't really see this. This is an administration that does not really operate within the confines of American political traditions, I mean mainstream political traditions. This is not simply a conservative administration. In fact, it is in no sense conservative at all. It is radical. It's a radical extremist administration. And it has no interest in engaging legitimately in the political process. I mentioned cynicism a moment ago, and I think they are supremely cynical. We've been discussing examples of their cynicism. But cynicism by itself, okay, all politicians, I suppose, are to some extent cynical. But what's really remarkable about this this regime is its sort of simultaneous cynicism and fanaticism. The convention was, among other things, meant to conceal the really extremist nature of this regime and the movement that really backs this regime. I have to break off for 1 second, Peter. Is that all right?
All right. Well, I will talk in the meantime. The book is Cruel and Unusual, Bush-Cheney's New World Order. And my guest is Mark Crispin Miller. It's published by W.W. Norton. You're listening to The Peter Werbe Show. And hopefully we'll get Mark Crispin Miller back here in just about half a second. Mark, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
That's good. I won't even be so rude as to ask you what you did. We got this new system. I don't even know how the hell to edit it. So it's not like old-fashioned tape. Now it's all digital. But you're back with us.
Yeah.
I just reintroduced you. Well, talk to us a little about language.
Somebody just came to the door.
No. Okay.
Very mundane. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Now, you have taught writing. You have a wonderful book of essays called Boxed In about television, and you, in your Bush Dyslexicon book, you talk about Bush's language.
Right.
Kind of bring this all together, the television presentation, Bush's speech. I broke my own rule and heard a little bit on radio. I didn't see it on television. I always feel like whenever I'm watching political speeches on television, I feel like it's an electronic Nuremberg rally or something.
Well, it had that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, a vast question, of course.
Sure.
But you know, the point of the Bush Dyslexicon, or the basic idea behind it was that Bush's slips of the tongue are not evidence of stupidity. And certainly not evidence of his being an average guy, which is the impression that he and his people always try to give when they play his slips of the tongue for laughs. In fact, Bush did it in his speech this week, a kind of bit of self-effacing humor about his faulty English. That's misleading because, as I've discovered, Bush only airs, he only blows it unscripted when he doesn't actually believe in what he's saying or even actually detests what he's talking about. When his heart's not in it, he ceases to speak the mother tongue. It's very strange. On the other hand, when he talks on certain other subjects, certain other veins, he's quite clear. And what's remarkable and I think kind of frightening about him is that he speaks most coherently without a script when he gets to speak as a punisher, when he's talking about war or revenge or the evildoers. So that, you know, although people had the impression in their terror that 9/11 suddenly lent him all this stature because he was suddenly speaking clearly, it was not because he had, you know, transformed himself into Winston Churchill. It was that he now was free to speak always in a vein that he feels calm in and powerful in.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if he makes a slip, like his famous one of, I know what it's like to put food on your family.
Exactly. He can't do empathy.
Yeah.
And there's that famous one that's in Michael Moore's film, Fool Me Once, Shame on You, Fool Me. And then he zoned out and said, can't get fooled again. he couldn't do, in other words, he couldn't do that old Quaker axiom, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. I don't think it's because Bush is too dumb to memorize it. I think it's because Bush cannot in any way express remorse or apologize or admit fallibility.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of having to say shame on me was just too much for him, and so he decided he'd quote the Who instead. You know, this is, I mean, really, the consistency of this tendency is remarkable.
Well, tell me a little about the speech. I mean, I was talking about electronic Nuremberg rally, but I can't begin to tell you, Mark Crispin Miller, how many times I've used the title of one of your essays is that Big Brother is you watching.
Yeah.
And that turning around of the 1984 George Orwell phrase. I mean, to me, watching speeches like that is like equivalent to someone who would, when one of those automatic robots calls you on the phone, tries to sell you windows for your house, and you keep listening to it.
Right.
But, I mean, people, I guess, watch that stuff for a lot of reasons. But the individual versus the spectacle or the image, are we any match for it?
Well, here's the thing that struck me as significant about that speech and about the whole convention and, in fact, about this whole movement, this whole moment. I try to capture this thing, whatever it is, in my new book, In Cruel and Unusual. We now live at a time when it's not only possible but quite easy for most people, or I'll say a lot of people, to walk around in a kind of media bubble, to walk around with their heads as if, you know, stuck in a special helmet that only allows them to hear certain things. And I'm not just talking about Fox TV News or Rush Limbaugh, because a lot of the stuff that they tell us is often re-echoed by the, you know, supposedly liberal media. So the thing that has struck me as amazing really since the Clinton years and up till today is how many of my fellow citizens walk around with notions in their head, convictions, assumptions, facts, data, every bit of which is entirely mistaken. It's completely wrong. I mean, it's not a matter of, you know, my spin versus your spin. It's not a matter of the Democrats always being right about things. As I say, I'm not a Democrat. I'm naive enough to believe in the difference between truth and lie and in the importance of using your reason to tell truth from lie. And I think one of the great things about this country is precisely the fact that the experiment was based on this sort of optimistic rationalism. The hero of the book Cruel and Unusual is Thomas Jefferson, and throughout the book I use him as a kind of foil to Bush and Cheney. What we're seeing now is not just a kind of remarkable readiness to lie. This is what a lot of people on the left say about Bush and his people, that they lie so much. What's more frightening to me is the fact that when Bush and his people talk, for example, about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq or the success of our military venture there, or when they talk about Saddam Hussein's relation to 9/11, no matter what they talk about, I actually think they are speaking with conviction. I think they actually believe it. And the convention was, to me, an extremely frightening spectacle, because here we had a whole vast space filled with enthusiastic Americans, enthusiastic understates it, exultant people from all over the country who cheered wildly every time Bush said something about present moment, about the economy being in great shape, Iraq being in great shape, Afghanistan being free. None of these things are true.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
None of them were true. And to see a whole bunch of people who, like me, are living in 2004, cheering all these fictitious claims. I mean, we can all accept the idea of people in Mao's China having their heads full of nonsense, as they did, or the people under Stalin having their heads full of nonsense. And we certainly have no trouble imagining the people of the 12th century, you know, walking around with all kinds of superstitions and mistaken notions in their heads. It's really a moment of worth studying. It is a situation that requires our immediate attention when the citizens of a democracy, so many of them, are so passionately convinced by canards, by pretense, by delusion.
Mm-hmm.
We can't really have a functioning democracy when people are in such a state.
Well, it just strikes me. I'm thinking these statements are made and that have no relationship to reality, particularly the one that Bush was making about Iraq and it's free. I mean, the United States and the Iraqi government that's set up by the United States has been driven out of all these areas, these Sunni regions, Fallujah, Najaf, and essentially the United States is losing in Iraq. It can't control Afghanistan. The job picture that just came in with a few more jobs, but nowhere to offset the millions lost, and that Bush just says that the opposite is true.
It's the opposite of what's true. I know. I can't get over it. When he and his people say the Iraqis are free, you know, I wonder what they're smoking. First of all, the guy who's running Iraq is a Baathist stooge who has essentially proclaimed martial law. Moreover, the 97 common laws that now govern Iraqi society were written by this guy Bremer before he escaped the country.
The American, yeah.
And he set it up so that it would be extremely difficult for any Iraqis to change the laws. One of the laws, for example, is that you can be arrested for driving with only one hand on the steering wheel. And that doesn't sound like freedom to me. Opposition newspapers are padlocked, you know. Baathists are back in charge, beating the crap out of people. There's a story that was reported very, very little in this country about some heroic Army reservists from Oregon who were patrolling Iraq a couple of weeks ago, and they came across some compound in the remote, you know, deserts of the country where they found these plainclothes Iraqis beating up, kicking, basically torturing a lot of bound captives, Iraqis with their hands tied, you know. And they immediately separated them. You know, they had the perpetrators at gunpoint. And they radioed their superiors to tell them what had happened and to ask them for orders. And they were told just to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was the Iraqi government, the new, free, liberated Iraqi government.
So I mean, you know, we can go on in this vein. The point is, what does it mean to say free? What does it mean to say democracy? What does it mean to say democracy is spreading in the Middle East? How can anyone make such a claim? I don't care whether you're right-wing, left-wing, Democrat. I mean, either these claims are completely insane, you know, or all the news we get from every available source is mistaken. And I tend to think that the news is more trustworthy. I'm talking about all around the world. The news is more trustworthy than an assertion made by this president.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at your book a little, Mark Crispin Miller, before our time gets away from us here on the Peter Werbe Show.
Yeah.
Mark Crispin Miller's new book is called Cruel and Unusual, Bush Cheney's New World Order, and it's published by W.W. Norton. One of the things you've said about it is that what drives this administration is irrational. Sure, they're in it for the money and the oil, but that's not all that's not all that's going on here. They're neo-Calvinists, which you should explain, quite clearly working towards the imposition of theocracy on the United States and then on the whole world. Because if they're just conservatives that we disagree with, that's one thing. That's Reagan in them.
But handle that.
Yeah, if they are trying to actually reshape the nature of the world in which we live in our country and the kind of liberal democratic rights we take for granted, that's something different. So explain Calvinism. That's a big subject too, but I mean just in quick how you're using
basically,
it.
Basically, you know, they are like the Puritans of the 16th and 17th century, in their way of looking at the world, in their conviction that man is sinful and damned, and I believe they have some notion of predestination, whereby they see themselves as the saved, as the elect, and everyone who believes otherwise to be heretical, even perhaps demonic. the thing about the Bush administration and some of its more fervent supporters is that they really don't, they really are incapable of thinking in any way that's not completely black and white. Anyone who disagrees with them even slightly, anyone who criticizes them in any way, is automatically consigned to the category of the demon, the devil. I mean, this is true of Paul O'Neill and Richard Clark, who are Republicans, true of Scott Ritter, a Republican, just as it's true of, you know, any Democrat or any Green or anybody else. But what troubles me and what I think should trouble all of us is the fact that the party is very, very closely tied in with a fringe theology that's known as Christian Reconstructionism, and it's had a huge influence on right-wing Christianity in this country over the last 30 years. Basically, Reconstructionism holds that the Bible is not only to be taken literally, but used as a kind of political manual and as a source for all the laws that govern our society. So
Wait a minute, isn't that what the other guys want?
Well, that's exactly right. That's
right.
The thing that I point out, that there is this grotesque face-off between the Islamists and what I call the Christo-fascists. There is a face-off where, you know, each side thinks exactly the same thing about the other side and about itself. Here's the thing. You know, I ask myself, you know, how could it be that people call Bush Cheney conservative? I mean, I thought conservatism meant strict limits on federal power. I thought it meant a refusal to meddle in the affairs of other nations. I thought it meant no government handouts, a level playing field for all economic actors. And I thought it meant a kind of ornery distrust of theories and ideological notions in favor of common sense, tradition, experience. Well, on every score there, this administration has gone way, way in the opposite direction. They got an enormous police state going here. They've expanded the size of government 100-fold, and they've junked a whole bunch of our constitutional rights by fiat. They have a policy of unilateral preemptive war, which is not conservative. It's reminiscent of Hitler. They actually censor scientific and medical information from government websites when that information offends their religious notions. You know, stuff having to do with women's health, stuff having to do with abortion. There are creationist books now being sold in the bookstores of some national parks. That doesn't seem conservative to me.
No, it doesn't at all. Yeah, I was always amazed, these little tidbits I find, like in the New York Times, at the bottom of one of these articles today, I found out that the Republicans had considered having Jerry Falwell give the invocation for the Republican convention, but instead they left it to this woman who was pretty much unknown, I think maybe a Mormon, and it turns out she just made a statement the week before that she said the fight against gay marriage is comparable to the fight against Hitler.
That too.
Yeah, so this is they don't want to have anybody's extreme as Falwell, of course, right?
Well, the problem also with Falwell is that after 9/11, he said it was God's punishment of America for tolerating abortion and civil liberties.
Yeah, what happened to God Bless America?
Listen,
we're almost out of time, but...
Let me just say real quick.
Sure.
You know, what this book is about is precisely what it is that is at the heart of this movement. It's not conservative principles in any way, and it's not just greed, and it's not just oil. I think it's a bizarre kind of aggression, a kind of self-hatred projected outwards that is ultimately suicidal. We got a kind of projective movement, by which I mean a movement that keeps imputing to the enemy all the things it hates most in itself. It's a crusading movement. It's always going after the angry ones, the bloody ones, the cruel ones. And it is itself angry, bloody, and cruel. So there's something profoundly irrational at the heart of this, and something completely contrary to the spirit of the framers, you know, who were rationalists and who thought that power could be contained in society for the good of all the citizens in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if listeners, if you are anything like me, this 25 minutes just whipped by. That's because there's so much here. Continued in Mark Crispin Miller's new book, Cruel and Unusual, Bush Cheney's New World Order. It's on my website, peterwerby.com. Mark Crispin Miller, as usual, thanks for joining me on the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you? What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of Kiss. Of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, like that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something. Yeah. Let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
I stopped letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101. Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff.
From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Well, again, transmission.
Here comes the music.
WRIF.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty...
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you as usual. You know, one of the things that always gives me some hope about this world that we live in is people that are trying to improve our city, our country, the world, the environment. And from time to time, rather than just pointing out what's wrong, it's a pleasure to bring people to the microphone that are trying to fix things, that have a vision of a world that's fair, that's just, that's environmentally sound, and the rest of it. So it's a pleasure to bring to our microphones Julie Hurwitz. She's the executive director of the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice. It's a project of the National Lawyers Guild. Julie Hurwitz, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks, Peter. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, and this is an odd question. I always think, how am I going to start? But in a way, there shouldn't even have to be a Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center. Shouldn't just the function of the law and its majesty and its criminal and civil matters just take its own course? Why does there have to be the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center?
Well, that's a very good question, Peter. And yes, you're right. In an ideal world, there shouldn't have to be an organization like the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center. But unfortunately, the society in which we live, in reality, does not live up to the theories of what our constitutional framework of justice and equality for all stand for. So because we live in such an inherently unequal society, there is a very critical need for organizations like the National Lawyers Guild and the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center. One of the underlying premises of the Sugar or the Guild Law Center, as we call it for short, is the notion that economic rights and civil rights are inseparable. And that's what makes the Guild Law Center such a unique institution, even in the world of civil rights organizations, because our system of law under our Constitution, while it recognizes basic fundamental civil liberties and civil rights in theory, although those are even coming under serious assault right now in this very dangerous and frightening time in which we live, we have never in this country acknowledged the reality that without basic fundamental economic rights being met and recognized, there is a whole segment of our society that can never even enjoy our civil rights.
That's interesting because, as you said, the whole name of the center is quite a mouthful.
Yes.
And usually I just hear it called either the Sugar Law Center or, as you said, the Guild Law Center. Whereas that second part, the Center for Economic and Social Justice, and you really don't hear too much about economic justice. That's increasingly thought to be the purview of the individual, that what you do with yourself and how you travel through life and what kind of economic situation you're in is your responsibility as an individual. If your job gets shipped overseas, well, you ought to get what do they do these days? Retrain as a computer programmer or something like that.
But those jobs are also going overseas.
They are indeed. So I know, for instance, that you have dealt with workers that have been left high and dry by corporate employers. Does that mean like the outsourced workers? How can one have an impact on that when this is all employer's prerogative? They want to fire you for your union job and go get somebody for a buck an hour in Indonesia? Too bad, buddy.
Well, that's very true. We unfortunately function within the context of a legal system over which we have little control. The best that we do at the Guild Law Center is ensure that those workers, and you're specifically referring to our plant closing litigation project or our WARN Act project, the best that we can do is ensure that those workers who are left high and dry by capital flight and global corporate abandonment, at the minimum, are their federal rights under the WARN Act, which is a federal plant closing notification law, are protected and vindicated.
Now, the WARN Act, WARN, does that stand for anything?
Yes, it does.
Oh, okay.
It's a law that was passed in 1988. It stands for the Worker Adjustment Retraining and Notification Act. It took 15 years of very, very bitterly fought debate in both the House and the Senate to have a law like this passed.
Mm-hmm.
Those who opposed it, which were the usual list of characters, the Dan Quayles and the Orrin Hatches, and those on the Republican right wing, bitterly fought the passage of this law, which is an extremely benign law.
Weak.
Very weak.
Yeah.
Toothless. What it requires is that when an employer who has 100 or more employees makes a decision to either lay off at least one-third or 500 of its employees, or shuts its plant down altogether for whatever reason, is required to give its workforce 60 days written notice of their impending job loss.
And the Republican right did not want to give workers this kind of notification?
Basic human courtesy. That's
yeah.
correct. Not only did they fight it, but the debates that went on during the congressional phase of, during the debating phase of this passage of this law, which was sponsored primarily by the recently deceased Congressman Ford from Michigan mm-hmm. and Senator Howard Metzenbaum from Ohio. The reactions that the corporate lobby had to this law was as if passing this law was going to single-handedly undermine capitalism as we know it, and we would end up in a Soviet-Russia situation.
Where you're saying, though, that it essentially had little effect. I mean, if someone, you said, hey, by the way, in 60 days, we're closing your plant and all the work is going to Thailand.
There's nothing about this law that prevents an employer from doing that.
Yeah. I mean,
there is a new law that's been introduced very recently, and I can't remember the primary sponsor of the law, but we've been contacted by the House Labor Subcommittee to assist them in helping to promote the passage of this law and to educate folks. That does tie in and strengthens some of the consequences of violating the law in cases where an employer is closing its plant or engaging in a mass layoff specifically in order to transform or to ship work jobs overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a teeny bit of hope on the horizon if the House and the Senate ever change its majority power, balance of power. But as it now stands, all that is required is that an employer give 60 days notice.
Well, they're lucky I'm not making the laws. Julie Hurwitz is my guest. She's the executive director of the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice here in Detroit. Because I think one could argue that if you have a profitable corporation that simply wants to move because they think that they can increase their profit structure and are going to ruin the lives of hundreds, sometimes thousands of people in the community, our community frequently, that maybe they should have to pay a big exit fee. Like, that would probably maybe even encourage them to stay. I mean, that doesn't seem unconstitutional on the face of it, does it?
Well, that's exactly how we feel.
Okay, all right, well.
And we have testified before the House and the Senate with those sentiments.
Well, tell us about some of the other projects. And one of the things, too, is please stay tuned for this aspect of things, folks, because one of the ways that the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center functions is through donations to its work. And it's very ambitious in terms of protecting people, representing people that are involved in seeking economic and social justice. In fact, maybe we should just give the website right now. It's sugarlaw.org, sugarlaw.org. That'll be on my website, peterwerby.com as well. And let's stick a little, Julie Hurwitz, on the subject of economic justice. And this is absolutely extraordinary with the fact that about the living wage. And maybe explain what a living wage is legally. I'm laughing because so many people, we found out an increasing number, according to the last census, are no longer have a living wage. They live in poverty. Millions and millions more Americans. So, but legally, what are we talking about in terms of a living wage?
Well, Peter, just to preface and follow up with your comment, there was just a report issued, I believe, within the last week that statistically reported that, in fact, the rate of poverty in this country is growing by frightening leaps and bounds. And Poverty in this country is something that is growing on a daily basis. The gap between rich and poor is expanding at an accelerated pace, and yet we are functioning in a society right now where the federal minimum wage of $5.15 an hour is so far below what the poverty index indicates is enough money for a family of four, not to mention even a family of one, to be able to survive working full-time in our society. So there has emerged, because there's been such a resistance at the federal level to even consider increasing the federal minimum wage laws, there has emerged a very exciting movement that started in Baltimore, Maryland in 1994, a coalescing of labor activists and grassroots community organizing activists and faith-based activists to get passed on a local level what are called living wage ordinances. And what these ordinances require, and it started, as I said, in 1994. Since then, there have been over 120 local living wage ordinances passed around the country. Michigan has the highest number of such local laws of any state in the country, with 15 or 16 ordinances now in effect in Michigan.
Which sets a rate higher than the minimum wage.
It sets a rate at based on, it's 1% over what is considered to be the federal poverty level index, which I believe at this point is somewhere between $11 and $12 an hour.
Which isn't a king or queen's ransom, to be sure.
And even those rates are very difficult for families to survive on.
Sure.
What they require is that any private company or employer who enters into a contract with a local government entity is required by the terms of these ordinances to pay their workers a living wage, which is defined as I just explained, and it varies from municipality to municipality, but it's basically if you provide your workforce with fully paid medical health benefits, then you can pay your workers at a lower rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pay your workers a fully paid medical benefits, then there's two tiers of wage levels, and you have to pay your workers at the higher wage level. And we provide, at the Guild Law Center, legal support to this movement, both on a national scale. We provide legal assistance to local living wage campaigns around the country who are seeking help in drafting ordinance language, in making sure that the enforcement provisions of these ordinances are as tight and as strong as they can be, in answering questions or assisting them in confronting what have become constitutional challenges to these ordinances. There is as strong a reaction to these ordinances by the chambers of commerce around the country and by the corporate lobby as there was to the Warren Act, if not more so.
Well, that's just what I was going to ask. I mean, has these living wages where they've taken hold, have they ruined any municipal economies or sunk any city into bankruptcy?
No, in fact, the opposite has happened. What studies that have been done empirically have shown that in those communities where living wage ordinances have passed, when they are effectively enforced, what they do is they tend to bring those communities' poverty levels up so that they help to decrease poverty in those communities, which is always a very positive step toward achieving economic development in those companies. Despite this fact, however, at every legislative session that I have attended and every debate that I have been involved in, or those of us at the Guild Law Center have been involved in, you will hear the rantings and ravings of representatives from the various chambers of commerce coming in and talking about how if we pass these laws, capitalism as we know it will completely crumble and we will have a socialist revolution. Unfortunately, that's not true. And what they have continued to say is if we pass these living wage laws, it will prevent economic development, it will scare businesses out of investing in those communities. It will wipe out small businesses. It will wipe out minority-owned businesses. And the studies that have been done, and in fact, there was a professor from Michigan State University in over the last 2 years, whose name escapes me at this moment, who actually was an opponent of living wage laws, but he undertook an empirical study, and as the result of his two-year study of the living wage ordinances in Michigan, he was forced to conclude that, in fact, these living wage ordinances were not detrimental, but, in fact, they promoted, if anything, they tended to promote economic development as opposed to defeat them or undermine mm-hmm. it.
And
last little anecdote. The Michigan legislature, which is dominated by the Republican Party, has for the last 3 years attempted to have a state law passed which would prohibit any Michigan local municipality from even passing these living wage ordinances under tremendous backing from the corporate lobby. And for a variety of reasons, the first time that it went through the Michigan process, it didn't pass. That was when Engler was the governor. Over the last 6 months, it was reintroduced and was rushed through the Michigan House and then rushed through the Michigan Senate. And I ended up, along with many, many advocates in support of the living wage laws, testified in before the Senate subcommittee. Just before they passed this statute. And one woman on behalf of some chamber of commerce got up to the stand and actually said, despite the fact that there is no empirical evidence to support what I'm about to say,
okay,
if you pass this law, this parade of horribles will occur. And fortunately, much to the credit of Governor Granholm, this law passed, mm-hmm. and she had the courage to veto the law.
That's good. Julie Hurwitz is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. She's from the Maurice and Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice, and that's what we're talking about. I remember Julie Hurwitz on when there was this big struggle around that in New Haven, Connecticut, at Yale, and one of the executives, administrators, you call them, at the university, at Yale University, said, "We are not willing to pay a living wage." And I'm thinking, what? I think they meant to frame it differently, but I'm sure no company ever says, look, the long and the short of it is, it's a struggle to who's going to wind up with the wealth produced. Either we're going to try to take as absolute much of it as possible, and we certainly don't want the political state intervening on behalf of the ordinary people that work and produce all the wealth. So there are just issues of greed and ethics here that are important as well.
Yes, there are.
Now, you took on a case at the Guild Law Center, which is the other name for the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center, where there were these unionized security guards, and I guess they had such a bad union contract that it was below the union wage. The employers said, look, I've got a union contract, so I'm not going to pay the living wage. I'm going to pay the union wage, which is lower. Did the union security guards kind of box themselves in and by agreeing to a lower wage?
Well, that case is still in. We have not yet actually formally filed that case, so that's at the very beginning phases of litigation. The union contract was initially negotiated prior to the passage of the Detroit Living Wage Ordinance. And what the employer is saying is that because you have this contract that sets the contract doesn't even say you have to pay $9 an hour. The contract simply says you have to pay at least $9 an hour, which is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And that's what the employer is paying, $9 or $9.05 an hour, and refusing to increase that hourly rate. And the position that they're taking, amazingly or incredibly, is that because there's this union contract, the contract supersedes the law. So that's akin to saying that if a union, for whatever reason, negotiates a collective bargaining agreement that allows an employer to pay their workers less than $5.15 an hour, that somehow or other that collective bargaining agreement supersedes the law, which is
can't happen. Yeah, I mean,
absurd.
Even in union contracts, local contracts, or even in our business in the entertainment industry, is you cannot have personal contracts that worsen the terms of the condition of the master contract. So They're not gonna win, are they?
We would hope not.
All right, let me look at our clock. Well, we're quickly running out of time, so we've mostly just talked about economic issues, and you talk about the Guild Center for Economic and Social Justice, but here's a case also that has to do with environmental justice at Beard School in Detroit. Could you give us the outlines of that, please?
Certainly. This was a tremendous case in which we represented all of the children and parents of a school district, of the neighborhood in Detroit, who were sending their children to a school that was recently constructed called the Beard School, or the New Beard School. It's since been renamed the Roberto Clemente Learning Academy in Southwest Detroit. What happened in that case was that back in 2000, the school district, to its credit, saw that there was a very badly needed new school for that community. The school that the children had been attending in that neighborhood was almost 100 years old and very antiquated and very, very badly in need of being replaced. However, the problem was that the site on which they chose to build this wonderful facility happened to be a highly contaminated industrial waste site.
Oh, how wonderful.
We filed the case in 2001, and just this past month, we were able to negotiate a settlement with DPS that provides for what we believe will be a very tightly monitored system of making sure that the What happened was, when they constructed the school, they did do some remediation. They cleared out a certain portion of the top layer of soil, and then they installed a barrier that's made up of 6 to 8 inches of crushed concrete, and then on top of that, clean soil. And the concern that we had in the course of the discovery that we did in the case was that there would be that the integrity of this barrier could be compromised by a number of possibilities. And so the need was to ensure that the barrier remained intact. As long as the barrier is intact, then there is little or no risk of the children being exposed to the contamination that's below the barrier. So the terms of the settlement, we're very proud to announce, have ensured that the school district will take the steps that need to be taken to make sure that the monitoring of that barrier is done in a way that will protect these children.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
And we have also, part of the terms of the settlement, preserved the ongoing jurisdiction of the court. And so that's a very important feature of the settlement.
Well, Julie Hurwitz, we're almost out of time, and we said in the middle of this interview how the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice operates on donations. And I'd like people, on the basis of this, and maybe a look at your website at sugarlaw.org, to consider being someone who supports the goals. And I began, remember my first question was, why is there a need, if we have a system of law, why is there even a need for an external body to kind of kick the law system in the butt? And of course, I mean, to some extent, it was a rhetorical question to allow you to respond in the manner that you did, and very well so. But just as you were talking, I was thinking, what if there wasn't a Guild Law Center? So these kids would be going to school in a contaminated area. Everybody, you know, there wouldn't be any such thing as a living wage, and you could easily pay people $5.15 an hour. Companies, without even thinking twice, could just all of a sudden one day say, hey, we're off to India. And so it is extraordinarily important that there are centers like yours and numbers of others across the country. And I think, and I'm even kind of chastising myself, we're taking you people like you a little too much for granted, and you're nodding your head. Yes, you are. Write the check.
Please. It costs an inordinate amount of money to operate an organization like the Guild Law Center. And while we seek as much foundation grant money as we can get, unfortunately, the nonprofit foundation world is shrinking at an ever-increasing rate, and the need for support by other nonprofits is growing at an extraordinary rate. So whatever those of you out there are able to shell up in order to help support the Guild Law Center and continue supporting the work that we do, every little bit is tremendously appreciated.
Well, Julie Hurwitz, thanks for telling us the story of the Sugar Law Center.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed in this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Good morning, class. Good morning, class.
It's that time again, heading into fall, back to school.
Hey, this is Screaming Scott Randall from 101 WRIF. Ever thought about a career in radio or television? Ever thought, hey, I could do that? Well, at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan, you can. Looking back to when I attended Specs Howard School, I remember hands-on experience with the latest technology in the studio and in the classroom. Teachers and staff that work with you one-to-one. Heck, Specs even assisted me in getting my first job. They challenge you to learn. And the best part, it was fun. This class is to fit most schedules. Financial aid is available to those who qualify. Deadline is October 1st. The classes are filling fast. Don't wait to call or you might miss the class that you want most. Get a jump start on a new career. Trust me, school can be fun. Call 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. The Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan. This is where you start. It's where I started.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
More unstoppable rock. Next on the Riff.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic image. Add the stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase, view the dancers, check the prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Oh, yeah.
Getting you back to the Riff Rock quicker.
Baby.
Getting you back to the Riff Rock quicker than anybody.
Gotta be the Riff.
This is 101 WRIF Detroit.
All right, man, Riff, kick that.
It rocks. It's on the Riff.
This is Marilyn Manson. You're rocking with 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the Riff.
Reach out and touch me.